Chicago Sports Conversation is now.
And that's blooped out in the left center for a base hit. Let's see if Bryant will try to score. Around third, here's the throw by Fowler. Save! Cubs lead!
The beat.
They're going to wave him around, and here's the throw to third. He's safe. Three-run score, and it's a 5-1 Sox lead on the bases cleared triple by Moncada.
On 720 WGN.
There are always moments in a baseball season where you just want to pinch yourself and say thank you to the world that I am alive and I'm a baseball fan. And maybe for White Sox fans, that was Yoan Moncada yesterday. But for Cub fans, it definitely was Chris Bryant sprinting around the bases on a 3-2 pitch where he got the jump and he's running early and he crosses second base. He's headed for third and oh my God, he's going home because Dexter Fowler has the arm of Andy Mazur who joins
him.
Wow. So you're saying he's got a great arm.
Do you have a great arm, Andy Mazur?
Back in the day I did, but now I probably could throw the ball about 35 feet and eat ice.
Can you define great? Because it's very important that we're very accurate on this show, the Beat 720 WGN with you till 6 o'clock. A lot to do. Jordan Spieth won a golf tournament. Define great, Andy Mazur.
As a starting shortstop on my 15-year-old all-star team, I made plays in the hole routinely on the fly.
You played short?
Yeah, I was short and I played short.
Where was this?
Freddie Patek, baby.
You grew up where?
I grew up playing in the Maine Northfield Little League system.
Okay.
We played our games at Maine North High School.
Okay. I mean, I've got all sorts of judgments here, but you're coming out of a prolific suburban league there.
Yes.
There is competition around you, and you were the starting shortstop.
Starting shortstop and relief pitcher.
And relief pitcher.
Yep. So you 56-mile-an-hour fastball that nobody could catch up to.
Hey,
or wait, maybe they're out in front of it. I can't remember which one.
Whatever works. You sold me, man. I'm officially sold
okay,
on your
good.
Baseball talent. So good. That's a beautiful thing. Congratulations to you. There's a couple of Cardinals fans outside the window here, about 10 years old, wearing Cardinals hats. They ran away after I just said that. So we might not have.
They're intimidated by me.
It's very important that we're all in this show together. I hope that you can imagine me looking out the window at a Cardinals fan. Everybody, hope you're having a great weekend. And we will get to the Cubbies and the Brewers, who, by the way.
Oh, boy, they almost blew it last night. It's just it's the Phillies. I mean, that's the problem.
Yeah, well, they already lost the game. The Phillies are playing good ball. They already beat them once for us.
Yeah, I know, but last night, I mean, it was this big, huge lead, and the next thing you know, I looked at my phone and thinking, oh, my, it's a game again. Oh, wait, what's going on? Oh. And then, you know, let down at the end, but oh, well.
Yeah, the Brewers ending their losing streak last night, beating the Phillies 9-8. But right now, it's Phillies 6, Brewers 2, bottom of 7. The Phillies all of 33 wins and 62 losses. So the Cubs are already up a game in the loss column with the Brewers. This would be two games up going into tonight and a chance to tie up Milwaukee for first place. Doug Russell covers the Brewers, covers the Packers, WTMJ up in Milwaukee. He's going to be with us at 3:35, see if he thinks that the Brewers are any good. I'm actually worried about the Pirates. Pittsburgh's been playing great baseball.
Yeah, they got Starlin Marte back, and things are a little bit more solidified in their outfield. They're getting some decent pitching, too. To me, they seem like one of these teams now that's on a streak and may come back to earth a little bit. We'll see what they're like come trade deadline as well.
And they are down 4-0 today, so that would set up they're playing Colorado. The Rockies trying to take 2 of 3 in the series, and Pittsburgh's at a dead even, 49 up, 49 down. So I just give them credit, though. You play the Brewers 4 times, your season is hanging in the balance, basically, and you sweep Milwaukee and get right back in the race as they got Starlin Marte back. What'd you think of that? Starlin Marte, if you don't know, he was suspended for 80 games for performance-enhancing drugs. Here he comes out, his first game back in Pittsburgh, runs out to left field, and Pirate fans are jumping up and down and bowing to the guy. I mean, I'm not saying you don't have to boo him off the field. He's your own player. But, I mean, how about just like a little bit of the silent treatment? Wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah. You know, and it depends. I think it kind of depends on what kind of a player and what kind of a teammate he was before this happened. Because I remember with D. Gordon, the same thing kind of happened there in Miami. Welcomed him back with open arms after he had, admitted to doing what he did. And, the Ryan Braun thing a couple of years ago as well, Brewers fans, of course, welcomed him back, but every other fan base in the majors let him have it. And I think that you know, once Marte's on the road, that's certainly going to be the case.
And he's a little more anonymous than Ryan Braun, so I don't think he'll necessarily get killed on the road, but he's not going to be getting a bunch of applause either.
No bowing to him, let's put it to you that way.
No. Pittsburgh fans, I'm sure they're...
Yeah, they love their own, you know? I mean, I think, think about if it happened to a Cubs or a White Sox player, you know, you'd certainly want that guy back, especially if he was a decent player.
Did White Sox fans go crazy when Melky Cabrera, ran out to left field?
Yeah, but I don't think there was a lot invested, with Melky Cabrera at that time. I mean,
that's fine.
You know, he wasn't a long time White Sox.
Listen, I'm just trying to hold a certain level of integrity, Mazur.
I got you. Hey, it's these guys, and they're the ones that are doing it to themselves, because now if the Pirates make a magical run and get into the wild card or get into the playoffs, Marte can't be a part of it.
That is an underrated part. Yeah. I forgot about that for a second, that because he was suspended for 80 games, even if they make the playoffs, Starling Marte will not be playing in those playoffs. Of course, they're not going to make the playoffs because the Cubs are going to win the division, and the Cubs are going to win the World Series, and it's going to be part two of the three-peat, and all that's happening. And forget anything negative I said as the season was spiraling away in the first half. I did not know, and I should have known. I own 100% of my should have knowing. I did not know that Theo Epstein was going to be as aggressive and that Rick Hahn and him were going to go to a dance party together and Jose Quintana was going to come over to the north side, not have to move, and be a part of the Cubs. I mean, let's be honest, we'll get into a bunch of stuff here in Cubs baseball around 4:30, and I want to talk about Jordan Spieth because Jordan Spieth is a story today at the Open. But I haven't spoken to you, Andy, and I don't think you thought that was going to happen either. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I didn't, because there's always this preconceived notion that these two teams are not going to do business together just because of the fact they're on the opposite sides of town, and there's a little friendly rivalry there, obviously between the fan bases as well. But a baseball deal is a baseball deal. I give Rick Hahn a ton of credit. I give Theo Epstein a ton of credit for going and broaching this whole thing, because. Listen, this is not just a trade for this year. This is not trying to bolster the rotation for 2017. This is a bolstering of the rotation for 18, 19, and 20. This guy is consistently over 200 innings every year. Another left-handed arm, a different type of arm than, say, John Lester. So now you've got you've got a solid three in the rotation right now.
No doubt. And I think long-term right now, he's the best pitcher you have. He's the youngest.
Most consistent.
He's the least accomplished. I mean, he's the only guy on the staff that doesn't have a World Series ring. But you're talking about a guy that you just said, most consistent, ERA in the mid-threes. He's 28 years old. He's got the best contract. I mean, Lester's making $25 million. This guy's making closer to 10.
Yeah.
So it's just that's why the Cubs had to pay a ton to get him, and they're in their window. We've talked about this a ton, but I just every time I talk about it, I just want to celebrate it. And Quintana, of course, making his Wrigley Field debut tonight. With the Cubbies taking on the Cardinals game three of the series. Michael Wacha starting for St. Louis, who had been struggling, but lately Michael Wacha's back to what he was a couple of years ago. He's been pitching phenomenal.
And remind me to talk to you about my experience at Wrigley Field yesterday. I watched every pitch, but I was never inside the ballpark.
Interesting. Very interesting. All right. I want to hear about, what were you, taking pictures all?
No.
Was it Mazur Photo Day?
It was not Mazur Photo Day.
What were you doing?
It was a little field trip to the new park at the park at Wrigley.
Park of the Park?
Yeah.
Okay, did you have a date?
I know. It was just a great day. Got a standing room only ticket, never went inside.
You're such an interesting person. Yeah. You're like, out of nowhere, Mazur's playing second, playing short, backhanding balls,
writing himself, throwing strikes.
Throwing peas across the diamond.
You see my curveball, too.
And going solo Cubby Park maneuver, standing room ticket.
Yeah.
I never would have done that in my life. Maybe could have made it for a minute, but I would have had to go in.
It was so nice outside yesterday. There was no excuse not to be out there, so I didn't make any excuses, and I went out there.
There had to be an ex-girlfriend of yours in the park that you were afraid to see.
Nah.
That wasn't it?
No.
Okay.
My picture's not up anywhere inside the park either, so that's all good.
Oh. Should we allow somebody who just called in to yell at me on the air?
Why not?
Okay. Hello, Mike. Welcome to 720 WGN. What's up, Mike? Hang on a second, Mike.
Mr. Carmen, I got to tell you what. Before the All-Star break, you were giving the Cubs. You had a fork in the Cubs and a knife in their heart.
I did? What did I say, Mike?
Can I tell you something?
Yeah.
You said so much stuff.
Like what?
I can't even remember it all. All I know is you said about everything that's wrong with them. And the only thing I want to ask you related to the Cubs today is when you look at Schwarber and the guy's batting 180, does he have pictures on somebody? Why would you not have your starting outfield of Hayward, Elmora?
Okay, I got you. Hey, Mike, and Andy, I think, agrees with me here. Mm-hmm. Mike, did you watch the World Series last year?
Yes, and I had four pairs of underwear going the whole time.
That's a beautiful thing, and that's an interesting number four because that's the amount of games that Kyle Schwarber was able to play in. And would you admit here, Mike, on 720 WGN, that the Cubs would not have won the World Series without Kyle Schwarber?
You know, I can't because somebody else would have batted for him, but I'll say this, you know.
He hit 400, Mike. He hit 400. He led off the 10th with a single that ended up being the go-ahead run.
Well, I'll also say this. Blind squirrels can find acorns.
Oh, my. Mike!
He's about a lifetime 2-0-something. Right now, I'll look at this year's team.
Yeah.
And I'm going to ask, I'll say this question to everybody that's ever been an athlete. Anybody that's playing competitively, when you see your manager keep waltzing this guy out there every night, and you got guys like John Jay batting 280, 290, 300, and you got Elmora with a great glove batting 285 the whole year, and you got Hayward, and then you keep waltzing this guy out, all I know is if I was playing, I'd be saying to myself, are you kidding me? And I love to hear your response.
All right, hang on.
Good show.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it.
I just looked up the numbers.
He is hitting for his career 209. Yep.
Okay, we're talking again about 145 games total, which is less than a full major league season. If you look at it realistically here, you're talking about 28 more plate appearances this year than in 2015, his last quote-unquote full season, which encompassed 69 games. The difference right now between a 179 batting average and what he was hitting back then, a 246, right now is 11 hits.
That's right. And the other thing, listen, Kyle Schwarber's had a terrible year, but he's been better as of late. And I don't know, do home runs matter? Even in new form baseball, I believe they do.
Yeah.
Kyle Schwarber's got 14 home runs.
14 homers.
That ties him with Contreras for third most on the team behind Bryant and Rizzo.
13 doubles. And it's not like, you know, it may look like it, but the strikeouts are not much different in five more games, in 28 more plate appearances, he has 10 more strikeouts than he did in 2015. It looks bad. It looks awful because of the way he started. And the thing that's impressing me, and I tweeted about this the other day, and I know we're going to get more into Cubs later, but you got me going on this. He faced 101 mile an hour fastball the other day from Martinez, lined it back up the middle.
That was great.
Okay, so what that tells me and what that tells a lot of hitting gurus around Major League Baseball is that he's not getting anxious and he's not late.
He's also being platooned right now. He does not play against left-handers.
No, he doesn't play against lefties. And, you know, the one thing I will agree with Mike on is that I would like to see Albert Almora Jr. out there more.
I agree with that. I would love to see a more even-based platoon in center
These
field.
These young kids have to play more.
I whatever's going on with Almora has been disappointing as far as his playing time. But I think down the line, you'll see him getting more and more opportunities. All right, quick timeout here. 312-981-7200. If you want to jump in, I get why the Cubs are not cashing in the season quite yet on Kyle Schwarber. And if he goes south from here, if you see that batting average dip from 180 to 160, then he will become just a pinch hit guy. But he hasn't been playing that way as of late. So I get why Madden is still trying to get him into the mix. Getting away with murder here from local families fed up with unsolved killings. Why can't Chicago solve as many homicide cases as other cities? WGN-TV investigates Monday at 9. He is Andy Mazur. I am Mark Carmen. This is The Beat. We are here till 6 on 720 WGN. Scoreboard watching here, 720 WGN. Good news. Brewers trailing the Phillies 6-2, top of 8. The Rockies lead the Pirates 4-1, top of 4. I'm watching the Diamondbacks, who are trailing the Nationals early going 2-0, top of one, that game out in Arizona. So just underway. And the White Sox are leading the Royals 4-3, trying to end their losing streak. Congrats again to the White Sox and being so active. Seems like they made a great trade with the New York Yankees as well. 312-981-7200. You watch the golf today there, Andy Mazur?
Watched it from about hole 7 or 8 all the way to the end.
You are a beauty. So, all right. I played golf this week for the first time all summer, probably for the only time all summer. It was very gracious of a friend of mine to invite me to a cancer benefit, and so I got to play at Conway Farms, which be the first time and only time that ever happens. I was completely out over my completely out over my skis. I'm showing up there with a bag of clubs with Fila irons from 1988.
It's not the clubs, it's the players. Remember that.
Well, I had a caddy like at Conway Farms. There's no carts unless you have like, I don't know, ins with upper management over there. So I'm walking the course. I've got Roger carrying my bag. I'm basically apologizing to him as he's watching me, like, just rip the thing apart. Anyway, the point is that I shot about a 140 Mazur, but
nice.
Yeah, it was impressive. So
it was 2 rounds, right?
No, it was one, that was bad enough for one. But so, anyway, all right, back on track here. Yeah. Jordan Spieth wins the Open, and as a non-golf guy was the reason why I was bringing that up. I'm just somebody who goes and has a complete meltdown, hits his tee shot over the trucks and onto some driving range that somehow is still in play, and he's had meltdowns at the Masters where he's bogeyed he's quad bogeyed 12 and he's quad bogeyed 15, and he's seeing his round slowly slip away. For him to turn it around on from 13 on in and somehow, some way, play the best golf of the entire tournament to win it. I can appreciate that, Andy Mazur, and I wanted to tell you that.
Yeah.
Go Jordan Spieth.
It was absolutely impressive because you're right. That round could have really gone down. And, you know, Matt Kuchar was playing really, really well, and they were kind of, you know, struggling at the beginning. Both of them were kind of matching each other in futility. And then that 13th hole happened. And I, you know, it was really weird because I was thinking, I'm feeling pretty bad for Matt Kuchar right now because he's sitting there waiting for Jordan Spieth to decide what he's going to do. I mean, he took an unplayable lie. There was distance, and that's why he was hitting it from the practice range.
He sailed it over the gallery, over the dunes, and behind them, he was closer to the practice range than the fairway.
Yeah, but it was like 30 minutes between the time that happened and the actual hole finished.
And Spieth was on the green just waiting to – he had a birdie putt.
Yeah, and it was amazing to see the sportsmanship that a guy like Matt Kuchar showed there because – you know, I could tell there's a lot of guys out there on the tour right now that probably would have been, come on, let's go already. Let's get this going. And would have really kind of, you know, imploded on themselves without even making a shot because it took so long. I mean, I don't know if you ever played golf at a municipal course or a public course where you're waiting on every shot. And it's frustrating because, you know, you want to hit the ball. You want to get into some kind of a rhythm. And Kuchar obviously was taken out of his rhythm. I don't think that's why he lost. Spieth just, you know, turned it on. He flipped a switch somehow and was able to just write things, and he gave his caddy a ton of credit at the end of the round for getting him back in shape and getting him back on the beam, so to speak, and went in and became the champion golfer of the year, as they called it, the Open Championship. And he's got a chance to become the youngest guy with the Grand Slam. If he wins at the PGA in a couple of weeks, he'll be the youngest. Tiger was 24 when he won the Grand Slam, and Spieth would be just shy of 24 if he wins at the PGA.
Yeah, it's hallowed territory. He joins Jack Nicklaus as the only player to win three different majors at the age of 23.
Mm-hmm.
Does anyone care about – does this change golf's interest for anyone out there? 312-981-7200. I'm just curious. We can do that on the text line, nice informal poll. 312-981-7200. Are you any more interested in golf now that there's a young talent out there?
A lot of young talent out there right now.
Sure, but okay.
I mean, McIlroy is still young. You've got
Ricky Fowler's
still
young.
You got Day, who's still young. You've got Zach Johnson, Dustin Johnson. You got a lot of young faces that are playing well.
let me rephrase, that golf has somebody who's being compared to Jack Nicklaus.
Yeah, well, that's
again.
Impressive. Yeah, I mean that's like a standout kind of guy.
I'm kind of under the impression that there's only one Tiger that could actually get people super excited, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. All right, news is coming up next. We're going to check in on the Milwaukee Brewers and the Green Bay Packers NFL training camp. It's our opening this week. News is next, 720 WGN.
Stop your feet, clap your hands.
Kind of reminded me right now of 2007 all over again when Lou Piniella was leading the fearless Cubs to a late season push past the Milwaukee Brewers. I believe managed at that time by a Dale Swaim, if memory serves. Do you remember that, Andy Mazur, when the Brewers fell apart in 07?
I do. Yeah, I remember that. That little theme that reminded me of the Lee Elia Dallas Green building a new tradition coming out of hibernation jingle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a good memory right
Way
there.
Way back when.
Love a good Lee Elia and a Dallas Green, RIP. Doug Russell is one of the great radio men in the country, works for WTMJ, covers the Brewers, covers the Packers, lives the Milwaukee dream. He joins us now on 720 WGN, my former radio partner. I hold him near and dear towards my heart, which is why I kind of just trolled Milwaukee right there just to kind of dig at Doug more than anything else. What's going on here, though, Doug Russell? 6 losses in a row. The Brewers scored all of 12 runs. I thought that this was some offensive juggernaut up there, and you're losing again to the Phillies, who I guess are red hot now. They won 3 in a row before last night. Can't beat Philadelphia all of a sudden. This is very disappointing, Doug Russell.
Yeah, they're really struggling right now. They're playing like a team that's still rebuilding. By the way, it was 2008 where the Brewers fell apart.
Yeah, that was a Sabathia year,
late
right?
in the season, and then Dale Swaim, the former Brewer and former Cubs manager, guided them to the wild card. That was in 08, as a matter of fact.
So what happened in 07 then? Weren't they in the lead in 07? No?
No, they were kind of what they're doing right now. They were a team that was on the cusp. They were just kind of ascending. 2007 was Ryan Braun's rookie season. They made it to the playoffs as a wild card in 2008. They were getting better. They were just kind of building
right.
toward 2008. So, you know, they all kind of blend together after a while. I do understand that.
But,
they're playing like a team that's rebuilding right now.
That's my bad too. I said Dale Swaim. I really, and he did step in as the interim, but I meant Ned Yost. Ned Yost got yeah. launched in September. The great World Series manager of the Kansas City Royals. Do you think that the Jose Quintana trade was kind of a big blow in Milwaukee? Like perhaps they wanted Quintana, and all of a sudden he's on the Cubs, and oh no.
No, I mean, I think they wanted Quintana. They were certainly in on Quintana. I look at that trade as I know that he's still under control for a few more years. But if I look at Quintana and everything that he's done in his career, I mean, he's still a sub-500 pitcher. He's still kind of having a lousy season this year. And maybe he's great. Certainly had a great first start, and nobody can take that away from him. And maybe he'll be the guy that launches the Cubs into the playoffs this season. But they gave up a boatload of prospects. And I guess that's what you need to do if you're going to bring in that top left-handed pitcher, which is what Quintana is. But I don't know that there was any panic that was setting in Milwaukee. I just don't think they've been playing well since then. I don't think one has anything to do with the other, but I do know that the Brewers were deep in on the Quintana talks with the White Sox. I just don't think General Manager David Stearns wanted to give up what Theo and Jed were willing to give up to the White Sox in return.
All right, Doug, that leads me to my next question about David Stearns. And where's he going next? I mean, we've heard links to Ian Kinsler. I mean, is that a situation that would make them better than Eric Sogard, perhaps, over there at second base? Or where else might they go?
The Kinsler thing kind of is just a little bit confusing to me because they've got a couple of guys that can play second base. Sonny Gray's name has been mentioned a lot, Andy, and they need help in their starting rotation more than anything else. Jonathan Villar can play second base when he's healthy. Eric Sogard can play second base when he's healthy. I don't think that's their biggest need, even though if you would look at over the course of the last week or so, they haven't been able to hit anything except for last night, which is just kind of a wild game back and forth. So, yes, they've had their problems hitting in the last week or so, but that really hasn't been the biggest problem on this team. The biggest problem has been the bullpen at times. Corey Knebel for all of the strikeouts, for the fact that he made the All-Star team this year, still for a closer, probably walks too many guys. Their starting rotation has been kind of a hodgepodge this year. Last year's best pitcher, their opening day starter, Junior Guerra, for a while he was injured. For a while he's been ineffective. So that's been kind of one of those disappointments of this season. Chase Anderson, who was pitching really, really well when he got injured, that's been a blow to this team's fortunes as well. So I don't know necessarily that they need a guy like Kinsler. I think that if they bring in a guy like Sonny Gray, that's probably going to bolster their chances for the rest of this season and perhaps next season as well.
Yeah, I heard some post-game comments, or actually maybe even pre-game comments the other day from Craig Counsell. You know, with the Cubs getting off to the start they did in the second half and the Brewers getting off to the start they have here in the second half, he said, you know, look, we're still in first place. Obviously hard to tell tone, you know, in reading an article online. I'm just kind of curious as how he's handling this because, you know, as you pointed out, I mean, it's still a relatively young team that probably wasn't expecting to be where it is right now.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Andy, and I think that that's something that Craig Counsell, I think, is a better manager than I thought he was going to be. He holds his guys accountable. He keeps them on an even keel, doesn't get too up when they're playing well, doesn't get too down when they're not playing well, and right now they're not playing well. So his demeanor doesn't really change that much from one day to the next, and I think that for a young team like the Brewers, that's really, really important, and I think he relates really well to the players. So I think he's done an outstanding job as Brewers manager over the, I guess, now two-plus seasons that he's been at the helm since Ron Reinicke was fired early in the season a couple of years ago. But it's one of those where he's asked about it every day. So you've got to come up with something. You've got to come up with some sort of silver lining saying, no, we're not going to panic. We are still in first place. Well, after they fall out of first place, yeah, we're still a couple of games out. We're still right in the thick of things, and there's still a lot of baseball left to be played. That's just kind of Craig's personality. I didn't read too much into it. They're not playing very well right now. Everybody knows they're not playing very well right now, but I think it's really important that this team doesn't press the panic button because they're not supposed to be this good this early in this rebuild.
Doug Russell, WTMJ, Milwaukee with us here on 720 WGN. So, all right, two questions for you, Doug. Let's start with number one. When the Cubbies come to Miller Park on Friday night to start a three-game set, what's that park going to look like? I mean, are Brewers fans excited about their team? Are we going to get at least a 50-50 split, or are we going to get 90-10 Chicago?
It'll be, I don't know if it'll be 90-10 Chicago, but I think that certainly Cubs fans have enjoyed the proximity that Miller Park gives to most of their fans.
We do.
Right. No, I know. Hey, look, I saw something. I think Teddy Greenstein wrote something in the Tribune.
Yeah.
About the new Bucks arena and how the Bucks are trying to woo fans from some of the North Shore suburbs of Chicago. Yeah, to their new place because it's faster to get to the Bradley. They're building it right across the street from the Bradley Center. So it's easier to get to the Bradley Center than it is to the United Center most nights. And I think the same thing is true of Cubs fans to Miller Park. So I think a lot of Brewers fans are still skeptical about this team. And I think it's a healthy skepticism because, again, nobody thought that they were going to be in first place for a good 2 month chunk of the baseball season. So, you know, getting fans to buy into this is a playoff team has been a difficult sell. And I think it should be a difficult sell. So there are going to be a lot of Cubs fans. I don't know if it'll be 90-10, but maybe certainly closer to maybe a 60-40, which is certainly more than what Brewers fans want and what Brewers brass wants. But get better, keep your tickets, keep your fans happy, and that's how you you kind of ward off the Cubs fans.
Back in April, it was about 90-10, and I went up there without a ticket, and I figured there'd be like a couple of Brewers scalper type of people out there. Nothing. I had to go
You guys were still drunk on the World Series, so that was before any kind of swoon or anything like that. I get it. I understand.
I had to go up to the window and buy a ticket. I'm like, can I get one person dumping a seat out here? But it was just like all Cub fans coming on up. All right, that's not that important to anyone but me. I'll stop talking about myself. What do you think here, Doug? Do the Brewers hang in the race come September 15th? Are they within shouting distance? I mean, the Cubs and the Brewers play each other twice in September. Are those games going to mean anything?
I hope so. I mean, if they can make September relevant, if they can have meaningful baseball in that last month of the season, I think that'll really excite the fan base. I still don't expect them to get to the playoffs. It'll be great for the city. It'll be great for the franchise. It'll be great for the young players if they can get to the playoffs, but nobody expects it. I don't expect it. The Cubs are a team that should be playing red-hot baseball. They're a team that kind of sleptwalked through the first half of the season. I don't know that there's been a team that's had a bigger victory lap in the history of World Series champions than the Chicago Cubs, and I think that hurt them in the first half of the season. Now it's coming back around, and they're starting to realize that, hey, we are a pretty darn talented team. We are still the defending World Series champions for a reason, and we're going to start playing like it.
That's true. That is, it's been such a good victory lap.
It's been a lot of fun, yes.
It's been a long victory lap is what it has been.
Well, the division's just been so bad that I think they can survive it. So, hey, real quick, with the football season about to commence, your training camp opening up, you're a big Green Bay Packer guy. You drive up into Wisconsin on a Sunday night, and the Packers are playing. You'll hear Doug on the radio. I heard you doing halftime last year. It was like the greatest halftime report I've ever heard by anyone. It was incredible. I was like, who is this guy?
I
had to look it up just now. Like the Packers last year, I forgot they started 4-6 and then went on an insane run all the way to the NFC Championship game. And of course, Aaron Rodgers hasn't gone anywhere. Are you making them the class of the division right now?
Class of the division, yeah. I think that Detroit is not a terrible team.
Bears.
I think the Bears are terrible. And I think the Vikings certainly have their issues as well. So I think they're probably the class of the division. I don't know that the class of the NFC, but they still have a guy who makes a comment about running the table and goes out and almost does it, almost pulls it off. So I never count out the Packers as long as number 12 is upright. I think they're probably still the best team in the division as long as number 12 is upright, and it should be a fun year. But then again, you could get 20 NFL so-called experts in a room. They could all pick 20 different teams to win the Super Bowl, and they'd all be wrong except for the guy that picks the Patriots.
What do you say, Mazur?
Yeah, I'm just curious, too, because, you know, we all are around the Bears, obviously, here, and we see what's going on or what's not going on.
Bears.
Just kind of, I mean, what is the perception of them? I mean, it's a rivalry, I know that. But it's only a rivalry when both teams are good.
Agreed. No, I mean, what was it, 2010? Well, the 2010 season, January of 2011, when they played each other in the NFC Championship game. That was a rivalry. Forget, you know, who wound up winning that football game. That whole week leading up to it, that's the apex of what that rivalry should be. It should be Packers and Bears battling it out the last week of the year. A couple of years later, when it was the winner goes on to the playoffs with the division championship, the loser goes home. That's what this rivalry should be about. I want the Bears to be better. The perception, Andy, to answer your question of what the Bears are in Wisconsin right now is just a bad joke.
Yeah.
Right now, it's just, I mean, honestly, it's Packers fans generally feel sorry for Bears fans. And if you're a real, true Packers fan, you want the Bears to be good for exactly what you're talking about, for that great rivalry.
Yeah, well,
not alone in thinking they're a bad joke, by the way.
it's all about to change, baby.
I want them to be better because when the Bears are better and the Packers are playing well as well, that it's just good for football. It's good for the NFL.
I agree.
Don't you sleep on Mitch Trubisky, Doug Russell. Mitch Trubisky.
Mitchell now.
They're going with Mitch. Well, I don't know. I've heard people say they're going to go with Mitch because it rhymes and you can do things like the Sun-Times, I believe, or maybe it's the Tribune, actually, who's going with it. They're going to call him Mitch because you could, you know.
They can call him Mitchy Boy. Just complete some passes and win some games.
We're hitched with Mitch.
It's like Joe Theismann when he changed his name from Theismann to Theismann.
Exactly.
So he'll win some trophy.
I mean, he throws three interceptions, Mitch in a ditch. I mean, there's just a lot of possibilities here.
I love it.
Thanks, Doug. Appreciate you.
See you, Doug.
Andy Carr, I'm good to catch up with you guys. Thanks for having me on.
Doug Russell, WTMJ, and my former radio partner at Yahoo Sports Radio, Mazur. I know you listened to that show. You were a big fan of Carmen and Russell.
Oh, of course. You know, I knew Doug from, you know, the previous incarnation of that radio network.
Yeah, Doug Russell had the longest tenure ever at that radio network.
Exactly.
And now he's back home in Milwaukee, where he belongs and where he's happy to be. All right, so there was a little Brewers talk. That was a consolation speech right there. I hope that we'll maybe be there, but no one's expecting anything.
Yeah. You know, the thing that shocks me the most about what's going on right now is that Ryan Braun is still a Brewer.
Yeah, that's a lot. Well, I guess nobody wanted to take on Ryan Braun. Is that why?
I think he's got some kind of a no-trade deal that you know, prevents him from going. It would have been such a logical thing for him to go to the Dodgers in the last offseason or even at the trade deadline a year ago. He's from there, and that's where he winters. And it just seemed as though that was a team that was – really poised to be able to take on that contract because, you know, Doug is right. the Brewers probably are kind of like, to me, like the Cubs of 15 on a lesser scale. You know, we didn't expect the Cubs of 15 to be the Cubs of 15. It was probably supposed to be the Cubs of 15 and 16, and this was supposed to be the year that they were going for the World Series. I still think they're not as ahead of schedule as, say, the Cubs rebuild was, but I don't think anybody really thought that they would get to where they are now.
I'm not willing to write Milwaukee completely.
Well, I'm not going to write them off either, because they're playing good baseball, and they're getting just enough pitching to make them dangerous.
They're down 6-3 right now to the Phillies as they creep back towards 500. And then they go on the road from Philadelphia to play the Nationals for three. And then it's three with the Cubs at Miller Park. So huge, huge week for the Brewers. And maybe the Cubs can actually climb in front of them. And then maybe even, let's get crazy, get some distance going on too if the Cubs continue to play good baseball. They got four with the White Sox. I mean, the White Sox are terrible. It should be a great week for the Cubs. And we'll see what they do tonight. All right. Timeout. Real fast, and then we will continue this fine program, which will be with you until 6 o'clock tonight. I got a question about Sunday night baseball for you coming back here, Andy Mazur.
All right.
Very, very deep thinking question.
All right.
That's next, 720 WGN. We do love to interact with you on 720 WGN. I love interacting with you. Andy Mazur loves
the interaction.
It is. I want you to know me. I want to know you. And I'm bringing this up before my Sunday night baseball question because we have a potpourri on the text line right now, which is just it's really fantastic. 847 texted in right when the show started. Rainy in Buffalo Grove. I mean, I appreciate an update from you about what's going on in Buffalo Grove during the show. I don't know why I necessarily needed to know it was raining in Buffalo Grove, but I appreciate the fact that you wanted to share that it's raining in Buffalo Grove. You're with me, right, Andy?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then from the 773, Carmen is the LeVar Ball of WGN radio. That is insulting, sir. And not very nice. And I'm taking that in a non-positive way. And LeVar Ball just got a T in an AAU game.
Yeah, and he pulled his team off the court, didn't he?
Yeah. Do I strike you as somebody who would pull my team off the court after getting a T in an AAU game? Come on, man. Or have the business sense to create a $495 shoe that even someone would buy? You got to give that guy some credit on some level. And then some, I mean, I'm nowhere near either end. Like, he's got some brilliance going on, and then he's just like the worst human being of all time, too. I'd like to just say that I'm right in the middle. The LeVar Ball of WGN Radio. And then the golf techs are just beautiful. God, no. Golf is like watching paint dry.
What did I say to you in an email before the show?
You love golf.
I love golf, and I think watching tennis is like watching paint dry.
Well, I mean, everyone is entitled to their opinion.
It's what you play. I mean, it's what you play, and I'm so intrigued by shot selection. I'm so intrigued by the conversation that goes on between a player and a caddy, and you know they take out their little flip cards there in their books, and they figure out wind direction and you know what kind of club can get them there. And I'm always fascinated at the fact that they're hitting their clubs 20 times further than I am. But it gives me hope that, you know, with a little practice, you know, I just turned 50, so I'm eligible for the championship tour, the Champions Tour now, senior tour.
You look fantastic for 50. Not for 48, but for 50, you look great.
Appreciate that.
I spent a night this week going deep into the evening watching the World Series of Poker.
Did you really?
Yeah, and I loved every second of it. I was completely, completely hooked. And the point being that I would rather watch that than golf, Mazur.
It's like, amazing. I mean, the only thing I would watch the World Series of Poker for is to see the crazy outfits that these guys are wearing with the sunglasses and the hats. And
Johnny Hesp.
Yeah. So you can't read the eyes. You know, you know when to hold them, know when to fold them. You know.
Did you watch any of it? Are you?
I think it might have been on in the background somewhere where I was, and that was really about enough for me.
Do you play?
You know, I never really have. I never really got into cards, into poker. I like to play a little blackjack every once in a while, but that's pretty much the extent of my card playing knowledge.
You're not the gambling type, Mazur?
No, not really.
You don't like to live on the edge?
No. I'm good, firmly right in the middle, kind of like you know you and LeVar Ball.
You're not an all-in guy?
No.
I'm just going to keep going here. No. So did you watch any, as we just run down the sports here?
Yeah.
What do you think about Chris Froome?
Chris Froome.
You know who that is?
Help me out here.
Yeah. That was meant to stump you.
Yeah.
Chris Froome, the Froomer, He enjoyed a celebrity ride into Paris, complete with the traditional champagne toast.
Ah, the Tour de France.
He won the Tour de France. That finished up today, buddy.
Okay, listen, I don't watch that, but boy, oh boy, hats off to those guys for what they go through, and that thing is grueling.
I was in a conversation at my other place of employment, fansided.com, this week with a gentleman by the name of Jake Walerius, mm-hmm. a.k.a. the Wally Wally Dizzle. And Walerius was just staring at the Tour de France all day long. He's like, why do you have to bother me when I'm watching the Tour de France? Why do you have to, you know, basically harass me into telling me that this isn't interesting? And I'm like, I just want to know what you find. Like, what is it that you're watching that is doing something for you? It's, you know, I wasn't trying to be rude or anything.
And I had a similar situation when I was living in San Diego, the America's Cup. I mean, that thing is huge near the big bodies of water, with the boats, yeah, with the Kiwis and the Americans usually going after each other in that. And I used to watch it on the early days of that four-letter network, way back in the days of college when it was basically the only thing that was on. They were covering that and Australian rules football, which I really got into as well. But yeah, I guess it's, you know, to each his own, what you grew up on and what you enjoy doing.
We're at news here. My deep question on Sunday Night Baseball, which you can answer in 10 seconds,
yes,
is, do you like Sunday Night Baseball? Like, are you happy the Cubs are on tonight, or would you rather, outside of the fact that you're doing a radio show that would be opposite from them, mm-hmm. would you rather it be just your standard old school Sunday afternoon? That's where families go, a little bit baseball.
I'd rather have it Sunday afternoon. It used to be a bigger deal when you couldn't see all the games all the time. It used to be so much more of a big deal to be like on Monday Night Baseball back in the day. I just think right now it's just the games take too long because of the commercial breaks. Sometimes it just messes with teams' travel.
Yeah.
It's a sign of respect, obviously, that your team is there because you've obviously done something or they anticipate you doing something. But at the same time, I'm all for status quo.
I'm with you, man. Give me the old school.
Yep.
But I am looking forward to a little Quintana on the bump tonight. And informal text poll again, 312-981-7200. If you are forced to only watch for the rest of your life the Tour de France, golf, or the World Series of Poker, what would you pick? 312-981-7200. I love this stuff.
This is awesome.
This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. By the way, we could take calls on that after the news, too. I'd be interested to hear it. 312-981-7200. We have a guest after 4. Never mind. My bad. The news is sponsored by Grandview Homes. Jay Jaffe, Sports Illustrated, coming up. WGN. I don't think Dale Murphy's ever going to quite make it into that Hall of Fame. But he had a great career, man. I love Dale Murphy. Just shy of 400 home runs for his career, huh, Mazur?
Yeah, Dan Third and Long belongs in the Hall of Fame with all these great music bumps today.
Dan Third and Long is already in the Radio Hall
of
Fame.
He's the man.
Nobody really knows that other than Dan Long, but he's got a deal. Jay Jaffe's not in the Hall of Fame either, but he did write a book about the Hall of Fame. It's called The Cooper Sounds Casebook, and I think this is going to be a little controversial here as Jay's got some opinions that others do not share, and he joins us now from Sports Illustrated as well on 720 WGN. Jay, to start off here, why are we learning about monkey testicles and some guy from 1889 that I've never heard of before? Because that's... as my computer freezes here, and I forgot the name of him, but you referenced that the first time anybody ever cheated in baseball was before we got into the 20th century.
Yeah, that's Pud Galvin.
Pud Galvin.
One of the best 19th century pitchers, 300 game winner. He was injecting monkey testicle extract because he thought it would give him more stamina. This is the birth of the steroid era, actually. Babe Ruth is reputed to have done something with I believe it's sheep testicle extract. The idea of getting a competitive edge chemically is something that predates the what we understand to be the steroid era, and that was part of the introduction to the chapter in my book on steroids and other performance-enhancing drugs and how the Hall of Fame voters should handle it.
you know, which is a very controversial topic. I understand that people have very strong opinions. The one thing that I know from 15 years of writing about the Baseball Hall of Fame is you are guaranteed that someone somewhere out there, someone will disagree with you vehemently on this particular topic.
Yeah, and the thing is, too, I mean, as time has evolved, there used to be certain benchmarks that were automatic. 500 home runs, 3,000 hits, 3,000 strikeouts, 300 wins. You just can't go by that anymore because the game changes, and obviously the introduction of the steroid era, the dead ball era, now the live ball era, whatever. It's just so hard to come to grips with who actually belongs because you really can't have those benchmarks anymore.
Yeah, the game has changed. It used to be every player with more than 442 home runs. I think Dave Kingman was the line. Everybody above him was in the Hall of Fame. And then, the expansion of the 500 home run club to include guys like Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa and Gary Sheffield, Barry Bonds. Now only 15 of 27 are in. Some of them aren't yet eligible. David Ortiz just retired. Alex Rodriguez just retired. Manny Ramirez shut out in his first bid, but it's no longer an automatic, and neither is 3,000 hits with Rafael Palmeiro on the outside, and it took Clay Biggio a few years. What I'm looking to do, and what I've already done with my system that uses advanced statistics, namely wins above replacement, and my own way of using that called JAWS for the Jaffe wins above replacement score, is to get away from the round number of milestones that are so familiar and to use a stat that accounts for a player's the era that he played in, the score, the variable scoring levels and ballpark scoring environment that a player played in, to get a more accurate measure of how much a guy helped his team. Now, there's still leaving open the question of how you feel about performance of hands and gloves, for example, but that's not the entirety of my book.
Jay Jaffe writes for Sports Illustrated, and we are talking about the Hall of Fame and his book, The Cooperstown Casebook. So, okay, do you have a vote, Jay?
2021 is when I will get my vote if I survive in this crazy industry long enough.
Okay. We're wishing you luck here. Andy and I have our fingers crossed for you and ourselves, I believe. So, all right, you would vote then for Roger Clemens, correct, and Barry Bonds, correct?
Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds, yes, because I think that anything that happened with regards to PEDs prior to the introduction of testing in 2004, the so-called Wild West era, I don't think you can hold that against players in the same way that you hold a positive test against players that have violated what is an actual drug policy since then.
Okay, but they definitely knew they were cheating, right?
Well, you know, it's like imagine a highway where there's no cops. If there's no cops, there's no risk limit. Baseball did not have a drug policy because it was a long war between the owners and the players, in which the owners were trying to break the players' union. They colluded illegally to hold down free agent salaries. And because of this, basically, there was just no way that the two sides were ever going to come together to get a real drug deal done. And, you know, unfortunately, there's a lot of collateral damage there. But that animosity led to a very laissez-faire attitude when it came to bringing baseball back from the strike. Owners knew what was going on to at least a little bit. They didn't care. And, you know, when you've got the owners and the commissioner himself who didn't do anything about it, I don't think you can hold it against those players in the same way. The union wasn't doing anything about it because there was a split within the union about how to handle it. So, again, I think there was a complete institutional failure. I think you just have to write off what happened there and go forward with, you know, once baseball decided to clean itself up, how that was handled.
I'm getting a lot of rationalization here, Jay. If I got a ticket in the mail, like if I was coming back from Wisconsin and I was going 80 miles an hour or 90 miles an hour, and I didn't see any cops, but then all of a sudden I got a ticket in the mail, I'd have to pay it. I mean, I knew I was going faster than the speed limit.
Well, you know, like I said, there are going to be people who disagree. That's fine. I think that, you know, this is the way I look at it. There are actually actual voters who agree with me, including Peter Gammons, who wrote the foreword. for this book. You know, I know that I'm not going to please everybody by taking this particular stance. And again, I want to stress, this is one area of my book. I write about the whole scope of the Hall of Fame and its history. The players, you know, more than 200 major leaguers in the Hall of Fame, but getting hung up on Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds, you know, as being the litmus tests on, you know, what you think about the Hall of Fame is a bit myopic.
Jay, you're pleasing me just by being you, for the record. Know that. I just like to have the debate. Go ahead, Andy. My bad.
Yeah. I'm curious too. I mean, how you see some of the players from this era that we're in right now that, you know, potentially could go and potentially could be up for debate. You know, I kind of think of guys like Adrian Beltre, who's playing right now, and you got Albert Pujols, who's playing right now. And a lot of talk came up too when the White Sox retired the number of Mark Burley. I mean, you look at, you know, Mark Burley's work, and you know, I don't know if it's worthy on its own merit, but yet won World Series and had a couple of no hitters, one perfect game. I'm just kind of curious how you view the players of today that have that opportunity, perhaps to get in the not too distant future.
Well, Adrian Beltre is a guy who I love. He's one of my favorite players of the last 20 years. For a long time, you know, until he got to Boston in 2010, he had played in very pitcher-friendly parks. And aside from that big 48 home run year in 2004, had really not put up a lot of big offensive numbers. Since then, playing in more offense-friendly environments, he's just about closed the deal on getting to 3,000 hits. I believe he's 12 short as of earlier today. And got about 450 home runs. The defensive metrics for him are off the charts. He's one of the top third basemen ever. When you put all that together, he's a top five third baseman. I believe he's maybe nudging Ron Santo out of the top five. He comes up in my system as somebody who will definitely be worthy of enshrinement. And I think, you know, for a lot of writers, just getting to that 3,000 hit is going to be enough. Mark Burley, I don't see him as quite a strong candidate. Certainly had a very nice career, won the championship, had some, you know, the perfect game, the other no hitter, some big moments for sure. You know, the changing workload patterns of pitchers, of starting pitchers, are going to have an effect on how the voters see current and, you know, currently and upcoming candidates. Well, you've got a guy like Mike Mussina. A guy like Curt Schilling, whose accomplishments are, I think, stronger than what Burley put together, and they can't get in. I'm not sure you can look at Burley and say, that's the guy who has to be in the Hall of Fame. You know, I think that the line is maybe, you know, ahead of him.
Yeah, I agree. I think we're talking sometimes, and the case comes up so many times about the Hall of Pretty Good or the Hall of Very Good, as opposed to the Hall of Fame. I mean, there's a distinct difference.
Yeah, there is. And you know, I think we risk getting hung up on labeling these guys by saying, yeah, this guy's not quite a Hall of Famer. Well, I'm not saying he stinks. We're talking about guys who are, you know, on the spectrum between very good ball players, very, very good ball players, and legitimately great ball players. And I think, you know, Burley, especially, you know, because his career ended here, what, it was 36, 37 years old? It's very tough to put together a full Hall of Fame resume when you're walking away like that, even if you are walking away under your own power, as you did. You know, the reality is that guys like Ron Santo and Ryan Sandberg, who retire in their mid-30s and still make the Hall of Fame, are the exception, not the rule. You really do have to generally put together a long career if you hope to make it.
Then I will not make the case for Chris Bryant to be in the Hall of Fame right now. I'm just going to hold out.
He's off to a great start. No question about it.
I mean, Rookie of the Year and then the MVP, and you won a World Series at Chicago. Like, to me, that's a Hall of Fame career, and you could just call it. I think he should play as long as he wants, but I'd still put him in. What about Sammy, Jay? Because if you're putting in my mind, if you're putting in Clemens, if you're putting in Bonds, I don't get why Sammy is so far down the list. Oh, Sammy lied, like Bonds didn't lie. Sammy Sosa hit 600 plus ridiculous home runs. He had 360 home run seasons, and yet he's just like cast aside, like his whole career sucked. I don't get it.
Yeah, you know, he does not quite measure up in my system. I have him several points below the bar for the average Hall of Fame right fielder. But that said, I don't understand. I don't think that it's fair the extent to which Sammy Sosa has just been completely disregarded by voters. You know, I think Sammy Sosa was a very important figure, you know, in baseball for a while. Unfortunately, you know, his time in Chicago ended poorly, and I think that has had an outsized impact on the perception of him, you know, which I think is unfortunate. I would say, to me, you know, the 600 home runs, as a round number, it's spectacular. Value those home runs at a time when home runs were so plentiful, they don't quite mean as much as 600 home runs would have been, you know, for, you know, Willie Mays, you know, for example, in a much more pitcher-friendly era. So, again, you can't go just by that. When you go by his complete offensive and defensive contributions, they're a little light once you adjust for, you know, for all the things you can adjust for with the wins above replacement system. So, you know, which isn't to say that there aren't other considerations that come into play, such as postseason stuff and awards stuff, and he's got some of that stuff. Didn't win a championship, but, you know, we know that, you know, the Cubs have historically, they've got Hall of Famers who never even sniffed the World Series. So I don't think that's quite the detriment. But I am somewhat surprised that he hasn't gotten at least somewhat more support from the writers in the voting.
Jay, will your system and the way you're ranking things, will it kind of relieve the stigmas, perhaps, of the DH relief pitchers? You know, I know Lee Smith exhausted his eligibility, but he was the all-time saves leader until Trevor Hoffman eclipsed him. And, of course, now you have Mariano Rivera coming down the pike. And, you know, with the DH, you know, you start to think about Ortiz and you think about Edgar Martinez. Does your system account for those types of players?
Yeah, it does. It really likes Edgar Martinez. Edgar Martinez played 500 games of more or less average work at third base. And so he gets this, you know, significant amount of credit for that. Even with spending 72% of his career as a DH, he was as valuable as the average third baseman playing, you know, solid defense. The average Hall of Fame third baseman, you know, which there's a bit of a shortage of them, but they are generally some excellent ball players. I strongly think Edgar should be in. He's maybe the most urgent case now that Tim Raines is in of the guys on the ballot, because he's only got two more years of eligibility. Mariano Rivera would be, I believe, the number one relief pitcher in my system. Once you discount the fact that much of Dennis Eckerson's value came from his time as a pretty good starting pitcher. So those are two guys, yes, that I think look very good in my system. Lee Smith, less so. Even Trevor Hoffman doesn't look that great. You know, the one-inning relief pitcher, you know, the advanced stats just don't love the one-inning relief pitchers. Although Hoffman, I think, you know, because he pitched in so many close games, I think there are other ways of looking at it statistically with the advanced stats, like win probability added, that favor Hoffman. I've looked at Lee Smith. I have looked at him, a bunch of different ways over the years. But one area of my system that I'm probably the least confident that I'm making the right call is the relievers. I've gone back and forth on Smith, but I think by the methodology I'm using now, he still looks a little short to me.
The book is the Cooperstown Casebook. Jay Jaffe is the author, and we appreciate you joining us today. Always a interesting conversation when you debate the Hall of Fame, and appreciate your work, man. Thanks for jumping on.
All right. Hey, thanks for having me on. Good to talk to you guys.
It was our pleasure. Jay Jaffe, you want to follow him on Twitter, @J_Jaffe, JAFFE. Sammy gets no love from anyone.
Nope.
Well, it is homers in an era when homers weren't that important. Oh, God, baseball is just
here's
hard.
Here's the thing. I know you got to take a break here, but the thing that I appreciate about Jay right there.
Jay's great.
Well, here's the thing I really appreciate about him. I appreciate him taking it seriously, because I don't know if enough of the guys that have the ballots right now care that much to look into it as far as he's looking into it. And it's a perfect example, I mean, of guys that should have been unanimous Hall of Fame ballot were left off, and for no other reason other than the fact that a guy would say, well, I didn't put him on because I don't think he's a first ballot Hall. Well, who the heck are you? You know, I mean,
it's a great point. Listen, Andy, I learned a long time ago, the kids don't care how much you know until they know how much you care.
Yeah, good call.
And Jay Jaffe cares.
He cares. That's a great system.
And you care. by the way. You do. And I care. Dan Long cares.
Yes, you do. And yes, he does.
I learned that back in the day. Kids don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Put that in your pipe and think about it. 720 WGN. All right. Bob Kessler. Andy Mazur.
Yes, sir.
I need
yes.
your help here.
Okay.
By the way, the text line is very upset with your weather reports, Kessler.
Why?
I don't know exactly. They just said they
sure?
just said,
are they talking about the weather reports or the 70s fusion band weather
report? The weather report that was part of your 4 o'clock news was worthless from the 847. He's very upset with you. I think you're giving great weather. I think your weather is one of the best weathers I've ever heard. Like, I wouldn't put you on, like, Skilling weather level, but...
Well, no.
Who is, right?
Right. So, and then I'm getting pictures from... I got a picture from the cloud over the Windstone Golf Course North in Barrington. It looks like it's a nice cumulus cloud with a dark...
nice big thunderhead?
Yeah, one of those. Sure. Exactly. And my point is that I am supposed to play the great Lenka Brusova in my tennis match today at 6:15 right after the show. And we're going to play a set for all the marbles. And she's out in Wheaton right now, and I'm supposed to, you know, is she supposed to come in and play at the Waveland courts here? And Kessler, you're talking about marine warnings and whatnot. I want to know if it's going to rain along Lakeshore Drive in the next 90 minutes. Your thoughts?
I don't think anyone can know. I don't know if that's knowable.
It's not knowable?
I don't think it's knowable.
See, but like, what happens at like baseball games, like the tarp comes out, they already know what's going to happen. There's people in position. People know. You're not in the know, though.
I don't think we can know it that well. That's 2 hours from now, right? The tarp comes out when there's a storm on the radar,
It's brewing, yeah.
A few miles from here. But you're talking 2 hours from now.
I'm wondering, are we brewing anything in the next 45?
We're brewing some things, yeah.
Are we brewing?
I mean, there is, 60-mile-an-hour winds and quarter-size hail that's been coming in, around McHenry County. So, plus, you have that picture from that golf course. That should tell you something.
Mazur, what's going to happen here? What do I do?
Here's the deal.
What do I do?
It's hard to come in because the match is going to take about 5 minutes.
See, that's not nice. That's not nice. Lenka Brusova is the third all-time, if you're just joining the program, the third all-time leading victory person in the history of the NCAA women's side of the tournament.
It's going to take her longer to drive from Wheaton to Waveland than it's going to be for her to dispatch of you.
I understand that.
In a straight set.
So, like, maybe, but I don't know, like, Lenka doesn't live here, and this has been a radio thing. We got to follow through on the match, and I think she leaves from out of town on Tuesday, and so that would mean I don't know what that looks like tomorrow. I'm going to have to figure this out during the news here.
Yeah.
Kessler, can you go deep, and we need Skilling. We need Skilling. With all due respect to Bob Kessler, we need Skilling. You didn't help me there. Mazur, don't you have like a radar there on your Mazur something?
Mazur's is more about your tennis game.
Yeah, I'm just, just ripping on your tennis game.
So people are texting, and so it just started raining in Rogers Park. That's very close to where I'd be playing. And then some other people are screaming, look at the radar.
Yeah, I can look at it. I don't know what it really means. I mean, that would take a trained weather individual to do.
I need a professional here. I don't want to just jump into the guy that looks in the radar. I'm a sports guy and a news and an entertainment type of something.
Yeah.
I don't want to jump into,
saying it's not going to take very long for your match. So we used to say this in baseball, there's a window.
I don't know if there's a window here. That's the thing. Like, there's not like professional dryers out there at the Waveland courts. 720 WGN 436. We're going early morning tennis tomorrow. That's the move.
Oh, you've already decided?
Yeah. I mean, it's getting darker and darker. We've got, come on. Can't have anybody come in from Wheaton, which, by the way, I'm terrified of getting smoked by Lenka Brusova. That's part of this. But I'm willing to take my medicine. I just don't think that... I don't think we're looking good here. I mean, Kessler's got marine warnings.
Mm-hmm. And severe thunderstorm.
And severe thunderstorms.
Until 5:18 p.m.
Until 5:18 p.m. You can't have that. Can't have that.
No, you can't
have
it.
Is there an indoor tennis place you could go to? Those exist, right?
They do, but
like
that's...
ping pong somewhere?
But then Carm has no excuses, because it could have been a wind thing, it could have been a rain thing,
We could go indoor. That was not my vision of this situation.
Didn't take the bait there. Good.
Yeah. No, I'm not taking that. All right. Let's move on off the drama of the tennis match. Mazur, Dan, do you have the Chris Bryant moment isolated, or was that just a part of the Open? Do you have that over there?
I don't have it. I will need a minute.
Okay, you'll need a second. We'll get to it in a second. Dan, you let me know. I apologize for the non-heads up. But I don't know, Andy, we've done a couple of these Cubs post-game shows, and I don't know if you're aware that occasionally I have a meltdown and lose faith for a second. And when the Cardinals hit back-to-back homers in the eighth inning yesterday, I was kind of in that zone. At the Blackhawks convention. By the way, thanks to the Chicago Blackhawks and for having us out yesterday. And it was great to talk to all the Blackhawks. Patrick Sharp was with us, and Jordan. We had Troy Murray the whole show, and Dennis Savard and Phil Esposito. We had Tony Esposito wrapped up the show. It was just an awesome time. But so I was, of course, paying attention to what was going on, and you know, to come back with three in the eighth yesterday, after the 9-run eighth inning on Friday. I thought that was a huge win yesterday. Yeah. Huge. And Chris Bryant, you know, after the game, Madden said, I don't think there's anybody else on the team that would have scored. And he's right. Mm-hmm. Nobody else on the I don't think anybody else on that team would have scored on that play, except for Chris Bryant, who is arguably your best power hitter, your best clutch hitter, and your best base runner. I mean, the guy's just incredible.
Well, here's the thing. He got such a great read because it was a 3-2 pitch, and that's the best situation, best scenario to score from first base on a hit like that, because he was taken off with the pitch and then had the play right in front of him. He realized that Dexter Fowler was over toward right center field and was playing very deep. And Dexter, to be honest with you, loved the guy, but he did not really make a great effort to run in and get that ball. I don't have any idea that he thought for 1 second that Chris Bryant was going to try to score on that play. And I think that may have taken him off of it a little bit. The throw was actually online, and it did skip just in front of Yadier Molina. He wasn't able to corral it, but the ball beat Bryant to the plate.
Right. And so, but see, that's the thing. There's two outs. You're going to take a chance. And
you have to take a chance in that situation, especially with a guy like Bryant running and feet first slide this time, which was nice to see, first of all. And I think that, you know, just because it was a combination of that great read off the bat and the 3-2 pitch, that just it all went into the Cubs' favor at that point.
Let's just take a listen. If you missed it yesterday, it's so good. Thank you, Dan Long.
Bryant takes off, and that's blooped out in the left center for a base hit. Let's see if Bryant will try to score. Around third, here's the throw by Fowler. Jay, Cubs lead. 3-2.
There's no more exciting play in baseball than a guy on first base just flying around the bases, a play at the plate. It's better than a home run. It's just phenomenal.
Well, to me, the best thing about that inning was not only the fact that they came back and they answered the two runs that John Lester gave up in the top of the eighth inning. John Lester did not deserve to lose that game the way he pitched. And as we found out after the game, pitching with an extremely heavy heart, losing his uncle the day before. And, you know, the two-out base hits are something that I think Cubs fans should be very, very happy to see, because
no doubt
you did not see any of those in the first half of the season. All the runs were coming on home runs. It was home run or nothing, or it was a guy stranded on third. So the fact is that you had the right part of the batting order up. I think you had the right people with the right approaches at the plate, and I love the fact that they're using the entire field. Now, I know Joe Maddon said it after the game yesterday. It's so great to see Javi Baez thinking right center field. Instead of trying to pull that outside pitch that kills him every time and he's late on and he swings and misses on, rather than just waiting back and realizing there's another part of the field I can hit the baseball to and be successful. And Addison Russell is starting to do that too, which is great to see. And I think that bodes more well for the Cubs in the second half than I think any of the long balls or any of the great pitching outings that they've had. Because this is the stuff that they have missed over the last 3 months.
312-981-7200. Are the Cubs back? Are they, you know, where's the confidence level? Would love to hear from you. 312-981-7200. Very basic question. Do you believe that this team all of a sudden has, quote-unquote, flipped the switch, basically, again, courtesy of Theo Epstein, going out, making the trade for Jose Quintana during the break, where, you know, that last Sunday before the break, it was John Lester saying, want to get away, want to get away, want to get away, Southwest Airlines. That's
ding.
And that's how it felt. And then they go out and get Quintana, and then they come out of the break, and all of a sudden they're hitting the baseball like mad. And it continues into Atlanta,
yeah,
mostly. And then, you know, they come through. On Friday, they didn't score a ton of runs, but they hit the ball extremely hard. Mm-hmm. And then yesterday, they weren't scoring either. But then they came through when they absolutely had to have it, which yeah. was very 2016-y.
Can I ask one negative question?
Sure, love it.
What the heck was going on with the double steal yesterday?
You tell me, Mazur. You tell me.
I hope it was a missed sign.
Yeah, okay. That's okay. What I think.
I hope it was a missed sign. Because if that was called in that situation with two outs and you're in the lead by one run with a man at second base and a man at first base, and you have a chance to add on runs for your closer who's, you know, not exactly been clean the last couple of times out.
Well, he's
got the job done.
Right.
But he hasn't been clean in doing it, and you want to give him as big of a margin as you can. I mean, I was standing out there watching this game at the park, and there was a ton of people out there late in the game, and everybody was just like, what the heck is going on? And I mean, Wilson Contreras was dead to rights at second base. I mean, there's no chance that he was going to get to second base. I just didn't get it. I mean, luckily, and you know, it worked out well, but I hope, because no one asked it in the post game because everybody was so happy that they won, and it was an insignificant point at that particular juncture. But when it happened, I was just thinking, oh, please, that had to be a missed sign, I hope.
Well, and listen, I love Joe Maddon. He's a credit to the organization, as bad as he was at times last year in the playoffs. But it's a thing with him. He inserts himself into the game at points where he just doesn't have to.
Yeah. The guys were doing all right. Everything was going well that inning. And you didn't need to jumpstart anything because it was already jumpstarted. And I forget who was at the plate. Was it Schwarber that was at the plate when that was going on?
That's, I believe
I think
that's
it was
correct.
Schwarber because Contreras was on first base. So, you know, obviously Schwarber has been hit or miss, but lately has been more hit than miss, I think, and especially in those situations and what he's been doing of late, waiting back on the ball and not jumping at everything and being too anxious. You know, boy, obviously it's revisionist history and they won the game. Who cares? But I'm just kind of hoping that was a missed sign.
Right. But it's not really revisionist history. I think it's definitely a thing with Joe.
I worry about those things. I worry about that, especially after what we saw in Game 6 and Game 7 last year.
But he always, I'll give him credit here, he always has reasons behind what he's doing. It's not just like I had a hunch. I mean, he's got his whole Joe Maddon card that he holds there, and everything is, and you know, and then I'll give you the excuse. Well, it just didn't play.
I will tell you this. You know, I've talked enough baseball with managers over the years, and one in particular that I worked with for a while, who always liked to be second guest. He actually welcomed it. And this gentleman and Joe know each other very well. It's Buddy Black from the Rockies. That, you know, it was funny because I was talking to Buddy when the Rockies were in town. And I was shaking my head about Game 6 and Game 7, knowing that he knows Joe very well. And Buddy listened to me, you know, as the fanboy was telling him how much I couldn't stand the moves and all that stuff. And thank God they won and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And Buddy, in his infinite wisdom, smiled at me. He goes, you know, this job is not easy.
Well,
and we forget about that because, you know, it isn't an easy thing. I mean, you're putting plays into motion, like you say, that you think at this particular point of a game are going to work and be beneficial to your club, whether they need a jump start or not. You tinker with the lineup a little bit. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's all about the players going out and performing, but you have to put them in the position to do that. And it's not easy. It's not an easy job to do. And, you know, sometimes as a fan, I kind of lose sight of that because I get into it. But at the same time, as a fan, you have the right to question.
Yeah, and the key, by the way, in my integrity world is just do it. Do your questioning ahead of the game. Don't sit there and like a lot of people will second guess the manager.
Mm-hmm.
It's like if you
that's part of the game,
and it's fun and that's great. And it's part of being a fan, and everybody can have an opinion on who's going to be in the lineup and who we should go to the bullpen with. And there's a million different things. And then it's something like that where it's like you could scratch your head afterwards. Like, and there was a lot of that you don't have to first guess that one.
Right.
But a lot of times people will be like, you should have, you know, it's way after the fact that the criticism mm-hmm. comes. Let's get Jerry in here. 312-981-7200. Are the Cubs back? Are you just feeling the World Series vibe here as we get to the end of July? What's up, Jerry? Welcome to WGN.
Thank you very much. I really do think the Cubs are back. I'll let you know I'm a Southside guy. I'm a Sox fan.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this is just fantastic. As far as Joe Maddon goes, I think he's doing the right thing at the right time. He's utilizing all the weapons he has on the team. I like the rotation. I think he's giving guys the amount of rest they need. My comment is, even though I'm a Sox fan, 34th and Ashland, I'm a Ben Zobrist fan. Okay, I think Ben is just – Ben is like Stan Musial to me.
Okay? Wow.
Yeah, he is. He's a Stan Musial guy. He has brought something to this club that the club needed, and they need all of them. Baez, all of them, Bryant, you know, they're just fantastic ball players. They needed a turn. I think the turn is happening, but I don't feel at times that Ben is given the amount of credit. You know, he ain't going to hit home runs like Bryant is or Rizzo is, but when you're in the clutch and you need somebody to hit a single or a double, because he don't hit no triples, but... You've got a guy like Ben. And I just wish that there would be a little few more comments about Ben. Not to take away from anybody else. They're all fantastic players. When I heard what Baez is doing and Russell is doing, and these guys have had some challenges.
Are you drinking at all, Jerry? Because you don't sound like a Sox fan. This is
great.
It's a full turn right now.
No, I'm a baseball fan.
Yeah.
Okay? I just wish that Ben would get a little more credit. I hope the Cubs can do it again. You know, matter of fact, the other night I was sitting here at the kitchen table and took off my oxygen for a while, and I decided I'm going to buy myself my first Cub jerseys.
Wow!
So I bought a Zobrist jersey and I bought a regular Cub jersey, and I will wear them proudly. I'm a South Sider. You can't take it out of me. Okay?
Of course not.
But, you know, God bless the Cubs. Joe Maddon is doing a fantastic job. Keep it up, Joe. And you guys are great. I enjoy listening to you. And is Mr. Panionovich on?
Not today, no. But I saw him in the parking lot, Jerry.
Well, I saw him. Mr. Panionovich, I met him when he was an embryo in his mother's womb. Okay, I worked with Cindy, and I know Sam, and... it's a great family, and I wish them the best of luck. And I'm so glad he's doing well, too. I really enjoy listening to him on the radio. And I'm going to shut up now. You guys keep going.
Thanks, Jerry. Thanks, appreciate Jerry. You. I mean, the thing with Zobrist, and great call, Jerry.
He's right about Zobrist.
Well, he's had a bad year. I mean, let's
call. He had the wrist problem early, and we don't know how much that contributed to the fact that he couldn't swing the bat the way he normally swings the bat.
Sure, but and that's all true. And he missed basically half of June, and he hit 132 in June, mostly, I would think, because of that wrist. Mm-hmm. But he hasn't had a very good year. But the other side of it is, even when he's not, performing to the level that he can when he's healthy, he always gives you a quality at bat.
He's a solid baseball player, and that's the kind of thing that, you know, I think Jerry was alluding to. You know, every team needs a Ben Zobrist. You know, whether it be him or whether it be somebody else, that you can always say, boy, I'm glad when this guy is at the plate, or boy, I'm glad when they hit the ball to this guy, because he knows what he's doing. He's fundamentally sound. He understands situations. He knows what he needs at this point. He doesn't need to hit a home run. All he has to do is get on base. Those are the kind of guys you love to have on your team, because they make everybody better.
All true. However, I love Ben Zobrist. Hit the double in Game 7. Will forever be I'll be a Ben Zobrist guy. He's getting up there, and he's not.
Yeah.
And he's getting paid $14 million a year. And you got a guy right now in Ian Happ, who's a lot cheaper and a lot younger and plays all the positions. So when you just try to figure out where everybody is going to play, I think Zobrist probably, and getting ahead of myself here, mm-hmm. but like, I think next year Zobrist might turn into more of a part-time player, just realistically his age and everything that you got to factor in with the Cubs' talent.
And I think he realizes that, first of all, and I think he's the kind of player that you never have to worry about going into a corner and sulking about it, because obviously he's won a couple of rings. I think the one with the Cubs meant a lot to him, just being an Illinois kid and, being born in Eureka and that sort of thing. But you know what? You kind of hit on a point, too, that I wanted to bring up, and it's about the playing time. And I think that's the toughest thing a manager has to deal with is playing time, especially when your team is winning. And it's kind of hurt one player and one player only, in my opinion, and it's a guy that I'd love to see out there more. I think we talked about it a little bit earlier in the show as well. and that's Albert Almora Jr.
No question.
This is a kid that I think has done some nice things off the bench for a young player to be called upon in a pinch to come up and hit a 99 mile an hour fastball coming off the bench. You know, it speaks a lot to the type of player that the kid is. I'd just love to see if there's a way to work him into the rotation a little bit more in the outfield to get him some more quality and some more more opportunities, I guess, at least to play a full game.
The Almora fan club has been building, and one of the guys in that fan club is Theo Epstein.
I agree.
Whenever he's asked about Almora, he's very, very positive about Almora and kind of, I guess I would use the word remorseful on how much playing time Almora has gotten this year, but I think that...
It's circumstance. I mean, it's just all circumstance because I think a lot of people expected Ian Happ to be what Ian Happ is just because he had that reputation of being such a great hitter. But there's always a situation where is he a better outfielder? Is he a better second baseman? You know, where do you play him? And I think that they're experimenting with that because obviously Ian Happ figures into the plans for next year. It's a little bit coming at the expense of a guy that maybe can handle it better than Ian Happ. Maybe coming up and sitting is not more beneficial to him than it is to Almora.
Let's get Ray in here, 312-981-7200. I think Ray wants to defend Joe Maddon. Cool. What's up, Ray? Go ahead, man.
Mark and Andy, thank you. Yeah. I think your last caller touched on something, and even the discussion you guys are having kind of like accentuates what he was saying. You're talking about Joe Maddon. You're microing the Cubs in midseason. Mm-hmm. They're having a good season. Anthony Rizzo said about 4 weeks ago when, you know, they were going okay but not great, we're going to be grinding it out and hopefully hit a streak or two. That's the way they're going to get in the postseason. That's when a second season starts. Any criticism of Joe Maddon, including last year's World Series, absolutely astounds me, and here's why. If you think of pure outsiders who have come into the Chicago sportscape, say in the last 30 years or so, so Mike Ditka doesn't count, Ozzie Guillen doesn't count. They had local pedigrees. I would say the only two candidates for best coach or manager would be Phil Jackson, who really, at core, kind of imaged himself to enhance what he was doing, which was coaching Michael Jordan, or Joe Maddon. Maddon has been phenomenal with the media. He's been a tremendous fit with the organization. Theo Epstein seized on that brief window with Tampa to bring him in, and look what happened.
Yeah, I'm not gonna dispute that, and I think the nature of the game of baseball, and just to kind of keep it going with the fact that, you know, any discussion that enters in, you can't always look at you look at wins and losses obviously, but you look at how they got there too, and I'm not so sure to say that I'm criticizing him because I understand, and as I mentioned, I think I understand what kind of a job it is to do this. I worry sometimes just about the over. It's not really overmanaging. That's not the right word to use. But, you know, again, I hope the double steal yesterday was a missed sign and somebody just didn't do it right because I just don't think that's the right opportunity. And I think we probably have gotten spoiled, and I'll admit to that. I think we've gotten spoiled because they're winning. And what do you have to do when you're winning and you look at everything? I mean, I guess that's kind of where I'm coming from on that whole thing. And I hope it doesn't sound like I'm coming down on him to the point where it's like, hey, you got to get rid of this guy because I don't think that's the case. But
Hold on here. But like, Ray, we're up against a break here, so you got 30 seconds. I'm missing your point. What bottom line, what you're saying here?
Any criticism of Joe Maddon to me is very ill-informed. I just think the guy has been an absolute, he's done a tremendous job, he's been a great fit.
Okay, fair enough, and appreciate the call, but I mean, when you pull Kyle Hendricks in the fifth inning of Game 7 of the World Series, I think it's a fair criticism.
It's a fair criticism, and again, you know, it's
would they have won the World Series without him? I would make the argument, no, they wouldn't.
Probably not.
100%.
Probably not.
Probably, I give him a ton of credit, but like, come on, he's not perfect.
No, and this is why I always say that the hardest manager, coach, head coach, whatever you call the head position in any sport, I think the hardest one to qualify wins and losses for is baseball. How do you actually qualify and quantify what a manager wins or loses, you know, as opposed to other sports? Because other sports are constant strategy during the game where you're actually pulling players and able to put them back in. You're looking for rotations. You're looking for you know, just signs of something to get your team going. You really can't. You don't really have the ability to do that in baseball. It's whether you leave a pitcher in too long, if you took him out too early, if you decided a double switch was prudent early in the game, and now you wish you had this guy. I mean, how do you do it?
I got props for Joe Maddon coming back here after the news. Okay. We can do that. Let's hit the news on time. So that means
that'd be
quick,
nice. Yes,
that's in 3 minutes on 720 WGN.
Now back to the beat.
720 WGN.
506 720 WGN. I'm Mark Carmen. He's Andy Mazur. Hope you're having a great Sunday. It's pouring all over the Chicagoland area. And everybody out in McHenry County sending prayers your way. It's been, I know, an incredibly tough, just brutal period. Absolutely, positively brutal. And we are paying attention and thinking about you and hoping, obviously, for the best. It's things out of everyone's control, obviously. All right, we'll keep it light here with the sports. And good news, as the Brewers did lose today, 6-3 to the Phillies. So the Cubs now 2 up in the loss column on Milwaukee, who's now 53-48. The Cubs can move into a tie with the Brewers in first place if they can beat the Cardinals tonight, weather permitting, at Wrigley. I don't think they are expected to play tonight, but maybe, who knows, could be a couple of delays. The Rockies are killing the Pirates 12-2, and Pittsburgh has gotten themselves in the middle of this race as well, so that's obviously something you got to pay attention to. And the White Sox, as you just heard from Bob Kessler, who's on top of everything here, the White Sox and the Royals today. The Sox fall into Kansas City 5-4 on a walk-off for the Brewers, as the Sox have now lost, what is it, 8 in a row, 9 in a row? Where were we
at? That's been bad. And you know, the last two games have looked eerily similar for the White Sox, unfortunately. I mean, home runs are just a big issue right now with their pitching staff. They hit 3 in 1 inning yesterday and 3 back-to-back-to-back today to the Royals.
But here's the thing, and here's a question for White Sox fans, 312-981-7200. Cubs-Sox is tomorrow. 4-game set, 2 at Wrigley, then 2 on the south side. The White Sox are doing everything right as far as the rebuild's concerned. I think we all agree that the Chris Sale trade looks to be fantastic. Yoan Moncada started off looking every bit the number one prospect in all of baseball. The Adam Eaton trade was a complete fleecing of the Nationals. Mm-hmm. And a ton of talent from the Cubs. And I think the trade for Blake Rutherford of the Yankees, who's now a top 30 prospect in all of baseball, one of the top 4 prospects for the White Sox, and that looks like a great deal for parts you don't need at all, and David Robertson and Tommy Canley and Todd Frazier. So, Sox fans, you want that high draft pick, right? You want to lose games. What about this week against the Cubs? 312-981-7200. You want to lose 4 in a row?
I'll guarantee I can tell you the answer already.
I don't know if you can.
I can.
What do you think the answer is?
They say no.
I'm curious. 312-981.
It's 2 games. Or 4 games. Sorry.
It's four games. Yeah. You want to lose all 4 and have Cubs and A, at the same time you're helping the Cubs move up in the standings, as they try to, you know, get back in front of the Brewers. But, you know, every trade, everything that you've done is for your own benefit. If you are all in on the rebuild, you want to lose.
But you don't want that to be a culture around your team. You don't want, you know, and that's the thing I was worried about a little bit with some of the players that the Cubs were bringing up at the time of the rebuild. You know, Anthony Rizzo is pretty much the mainstay, and I didn't think you had to really worry about his attitude towards that at all. But, you know, you don't want these guys to come up here and go, okay, we're going out there, we're going to lose again. Oh, man, okay.
Yeah, but, I mean, I don't think that, like you just mentioned Rizzo. Like, he wasn't permanently damaged.
But there's a special you know, type of player that can go through that and not have to worry about, you know, lingering effects of monumental losses and terrible seasons. And I'm not saying that's going to be the case. Trust me. I'm of the belief, and I took a lot of grief on Twitter from some White Sox fans who, you know, when I praised Rick Hahn for what I thought he was doing correctly, they say, well, how can you excuse what he did before to get them to this point? And I'm not trying to excuse what he did to get them to the point. He had some help in getting to this point, and it wasn't only him. I think it's more only him now that they're starting to build a more successful farm system and putting them in a position to win. You know, it's not that you're looking past it. It's that you're living in the moment. I mean, this is what you have to do. You have to live right now and say, at this point, picking a direction, starting to act on that direction, and losing games, this is where you thought you would be. And this is where you, this is where the part of the plan thought you would be.
I think it's a very fair criticism, though. You had, you had Chris Sale on the best contract in all of baseball, and you had Jose Quintana on probably the second best contract in all of baseball. You had an incredible opportunity for years to build around these guys, and nothing.
And they failed. I mean, they
miserably.
Did fail, but it was a situation again. And I don't want to throw anybody under the bus because, of course, I'm not around there, and I don't know this to be, these to be facts. These are just kind of the things that run through my mind as somebody that's been around the game a while. Is that, was Rick Hahn the only one making the decisions at that point? Was there other
clearly not?
Was there other influences? So again, when you're finally given the keys of the car, you can only judge the person on the who's driving on his driving record.
Yeah, and forget, I don't think at all, I'm not pointing all at Rick Hahn. I'm just pointing at the, at
it was general organizational failure.
Right, as the at the organization as a whole, you had Chris Sale at basically $5 million a year.
But here's the thing.
Yeah.
They could have gone on status quo. They could have been, again, kept all those guys and tried a different Band-Aid. You know, if it wasn't Adam Dunn or Adam LaRoche or Todd Frazier, you know, what other high-priced free agent were they going to bring in this year to try to be the guy to save it? You know, it goes back to, you know, the Cubs, even before this, you know, even after the 08 and 09, even before that in 05 and 06, when you're trying to Band-Aid things that need much more than a Band-Aid. They need sutures. I mean, they need stitches. So give the Cubs credit for recognizing that when Theo came in, and give the White Sox credit for the living in the right now, knowing what they needed to do to try to sustain success over the long haul. Is kind of taking the model of what the Cubs did, making it their own, and doing what they're doing now.
Let me just make this equal opportunity go at,
sure.
at management.
Yeah, good.
If you go on, you know, Cubs, if you go on MLB.com right now,
mm-hmm.
and you try to buy tickets for tomorrow's Cubs-White Sox game, which, by the way, is a day game during the week, Monday and Tuesday. Why is it a day game during the week and not a night game? Well, because the Cubs know that they're going to sell out, in theory, with the White Sox, so mm-hmm. they're going to have night games in April when it's freezing,
right?
Which is, let's call it what it is, greed, and also, I guess, you know, smart business all at the same time. But so tomorrow is a day game. If you go online right now, as I'm doing, you can get a seat right behind home plate, in section 19, row 10, you only will have to pay $329 for it. That's the issue. If you, the Cubs Sox game tomorrow at Wrigley Field, let me just see here if I can buy seats in. Now, I mean, you have terrace reserved outfield tickets. Terrace reserved outfield, which is underneath the overhang mm-hmm. down the line. It's the worst seat in the park by my estimation. I'd rather be up top in like in the 500 level than down the line and left, or down the line and right in the terrace. Do you agree with me there, Mazur?
All the way down the line and right and left, there are tough. There are tough visual.
You can't
on,
see
on
anything.
The field. It's hard. It's hard to do. And I agree. I'd rather be up.
Right. Okay. So this they're charging. The Cubs are charging $82 for those. And for some reason, this is not working the way I want. Bottom line is, they have every seat category available tomorrow. And they're just trying to, you know, get it's a gouge, man, is what I'm getting at here. $82 for down the line in the corner, that's not the way this should go.
Okay,
I'm sorry.
Well, that's okay. So would you rather pay $82 a seat or not have John Lester?
so does it really, is it that way?
Well,
they bought the club for $800, and I get it. There's mm-hmm. no gun to the head. You don't have to go to a baseball game.
Right.
And by the way, baseball is also the most affordable game to go to. If you want to go in April, you can go to a Cubs game for $10 and sit up top, or $15, whatever it is. So there's plenty of affordable options. So Cubs White Sox is a primetime game. But I think it's telling to the Cubs that, hey, you're playing the White Sox the year after you won the World Series at home at Wrigley Field, and it's not sold out. Perhaps you might want to lower those prices. Fair enough.
Trust me, by the time the game first pitch is tomorrow,
yeah.
it'll be sold out.
No, okay, I mean, I just put in best available now. You want to sit over the first base dugout in row 3?
I mean, I don't. I mean, that's just, you know, that's just me, but
okay, I mean, those are available too for,
but like
three,
you said,
for $329 a ticket. Maybe the ones from a high home plate, somebody was listening to the show and bought them up. I don't know.
You have the choice. I mean, you do have the choice. And I hate to be as you know, blunt about it as I just was to you, but you know, there are people that complain all the time about the food prices there, the beer prices there, you know, the different options and things of that nature. But again, sometimes it's the price of winning that you know builds the desire for people to come out there. And what is the team supposed to do?
As far as,
or are they going to cut their prices?
Well, I thought that they should have cut their prices when they were putting a subpar product on the field. And they were trying to lose.
Argument there. I mean, I wasn't around town when that was going on, but I agree with you on that. I mean, if you know your team is going to be out there and be awful and poor, yeah, you know, build it back up and you know do some nice things for your fan base. But you've won now, and now you want to stay competitive. And most of your top prospects are with you or have been traded for players that have helped you. And you're going to probably have to go out now and make another trade, make some free agency moves in the offseason. And I get the fact that the Ricketts have money, and I get the fact that the Ricketts have business opportunities here with the, you know, at the park, and now they have the hotel coming and the rooftop things are a lot of them, they own a lot of, but seriously, I mean, they're not in it to lose money.
And they're not, by the way. I mean, what's the club worth now? $2 billion,
easily. But okay. I mean, it's a price. It's such a catch-22, because you know you want to be a fan of a team, you want to see your team win, but at the same time, who pays the price when your team wins? Well, you know, unfortunately, it's you.
Right. That is the catch-22. You said you had a great time yesterday buying a standing room ticket and hanging out in the park.
I bought a standing room ticket, and the only complaint I have about the outdoor seating and outdoor area that they have right now is there's not a lot of food options unless you want to go into the new restaurants and things of that nature, and it kind of takes you out of the element.
Uh-huh.
But just being able to stand out there and kind of enjoy the weather and just kind of enjoy some people watching the game is up on the video screen there. No delay. It's delay free. So you hear the cheers as you see them happening on the video screen out there. It's pretty cool out there. I mean, I was one of those people who really thought I was not going to like it just because it was another thing to add on and maybe detract from the beauty and the aesthetics of Wrigley Field. I figured I would try it. It was such a nice day.
I didn't have tickets.
and I went online with a friend of mine and paid. Can't remember what the ticket was, but you know, who cares? I was out there and had a couple of beers, and I went into the new restaurant over there. I had a burger and came back out and watched the game.
You went online, bought a standing room
day of,
mm-hmm. bought a standing room ticket,
and never went into the park,
never,
not once.
That's bizarre, Andy. I'm impressed.
It was one of those things. Like I said, I wanted to try it. It was a unique opportunity because, again, the weather was beautiful and it was not real humid. It was not real hot. It was nice. There's kids out there playing catch with their dads.
312-98.
It was cool to see.
312-981-7200. Why didn't Mazur go into the park?
I had no reason.
There was either an ex-girl, there was a family member that
you're
he did.
Always looking for the conspiracy.
There's got to be something. There was a family member. There was you wanted to avoid a former coworker. You thought I was in there.
Well, if you were out there, I was kind of hoping you were venting, and you come to my section all the time. I'd give you a good tip.
I would have seen you in 237 back in the day.
Would have given you a nice tip.
312-981-7200. What is Mazur not telling us here? To go and spend you could have gone and stood on the street and looked at the game in Moran's or at Bernie's.
But I had the opportunity, if I wanted to go in and do what and walk around because I didn't have a seat. I had a standing room. I looked at the you can see in to where all the standing room people are. And it was packed. I mean, there was no chance of me seeing the game from inside wherever I would stand.
Okay, but you could have, walked around, and perhaps there would have been a seat or two available for you.
I walked around the park. I had more choices of people watching there.
Did Mazur meet somebody inside in the park on the grass that he was flirting with the whole game and wasn't actually watching the game?
I watched every pitch.
Let's see.
I watched every stinking pitch.
773. Andy must be part of R. Kelly's love cult.
Wow.
That's aggressive.
That's really aggressive.
That is super aggressive and uncomfortable. But
my lawyer will be
anyway.
Contacting you shortly.
All right. Little quick timeout. I know you only got one segment left because you got to go to do TV. So mm-hmm. I have something special for you coming back just for you.
Love
Andy.
That.
Okay. 720 WGN. All right. This stat is for you, Andy Mazur.
All right, bring it to me.
with a White Sox loss today, which has already happened, 5-4 to the Royals, and if the Cubs can win tonight, each Chicago baseball team will be able to say that it's that their last win came in a Jose Quintana start.
Oh, wow.
What do you think of that one, buddy? That's courtesy of our guy, Chris Comka, over at Comcast Sportsnet and at C Comka on Twitter.
That guy's awesome, by the way.
He's incredible. He's incredible. So his last win with the White Sox was July the 8th when they beat Colorado 5-4, as the Sox have been in a torrential losing streak here. And Cubs win tonight, then that would be the final part of that equation. There you go.
That's amazing.
It's kind of depressing.
Now it's got to happen.
But it's exactly what the White Sox are trying to do.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. And, you know, that's you have to remember back to a few short years ago when that's exactly what the Cubs were trying to do. And I've explained to a couple of friends of mine that are White Sox fans who say, well, you know, they're acquiring all these guys. They all play the same position. Who's going to play? I'm like, listen, you don't get it here. Not all of these guys are going to be playing for your major league team at some point. A lot of these guys are going to get you players that you need when you need them because they're highly regarded prospects. I mean, you look at Gleyber Torres for the Cubs, they got Aroldis Chapman. You know, you look at Dylan Cease and you look at Eloy Jimenez and they net you Jose Quintana. So, you know, you also stockpile prospects not only for yourself, but because you want them to turn into a major league ready player when you need that major league ready player.
No doubt. Cubs lineup tonight, Jason Hayward leading off. I do not like the Jason Hayward leading off. I don't know if Joe Maddon is aware of how Jason Hayward basically claims that him leading off in Atlanta started the downturn of his career because he altered his approach at the plate. The guy's been going well. I don't think you want to mess with it, but this is the second time this week that Hayward's leading off. Chris Bryant, we don't have to have our Jason Hayward conversation, Andy, for the millionth time. Chris Bryant is batting second at third, then Rizzo at first, Contreras catching, settling into that cleanup role. Kyle Schwarber in left batting fifth, Ian Happ in center, hitting sixth. Russell, seven at short, Baez, eighth at second, and Jose Quintana on the mound. Your lineup for the Cubbies tonight, as Joe Maddon has moved it around a gazillion times this year. I mean, yesterday he had Zobrist leading off, and today it's back to Hayward.
Yeah, I think of all the guys that that have run through it at this point, the guy that belongs up there of the ones that have tried it are either John Jay or Ben Zobrist, to me right now.
I would agree.
Those two guys seem to me to be the biggest, the best fit for that top spot. I mean, I know Rizzo had some success, but that was more to kind of lighten things up, I think, a little bit more than anything at that point, because it was such a downer of a first half. But, you know, consistency and approach at the plate, yeah, I can see where Jason Hayward's coming from. That's why I was not a big fan of the Schwarber thing from the very beginning. I thought if you had a choice between Schwarber and Zobrist, it should have been Zobrist just because he's more accomplished. I think Hayward can handle it now. I think that's he's a little bit different in mindset at this point. But,
and he let off on Friday, and the first pitch he saw was a fastball, and he swung on it. He swung at it, grounded out to short.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, I think, one of the reasons why Hayward's having success this year, outside of the fact that he worked incredibly hard in the offseason, is they figured out that Jason Hayward was letting a lot of fastballs down the middle go by him early in the count. So he's adjusted his approach that way, and so now it's up to the pitchers to adjust back to him and the old cat and mouse game that they play. There is momentum building, by the way, that Andy Mazur is actually in R. Kelly's love cult.
That's incredible because, first of all, I probably couldn't name two R. Kelly songs. If you walked past me on the street, I probably wouldn't know who he was.
Really?
So to think that I would do something of that nature really disturbs me.
Yeah, and
I need a moment now.
And judging by everything we've heard, R. Kelly belongs in prison, but we'll have a little fun with you and R. Kelly.
So there was nothing sinister about my trip to the park at Wrigley yesterday, other than to say that I experienced the park at Wrigley.
Well, Bonnie's with you. She says, Andy, that sounds like a great experience. I'll try it myself.
Thank you, Bonnie.
Bonnie's there. But then there's the other side of just your, you know.
Yeah. You always get the other side, and that's what drives you a little crazy sometimes. But you know what? I'm a big person. I can deal with it.
You're filling in for Josh Freiman tonight on Sports?
No, actually, I'm filling in for JP tonight.
Oh, you're filling in for Jared Payton?
Yeah, I'm filling in for JP. Those are big shoes. He leaves his shoes here and expects me to wear them.
Well, that's
tough. They're like size 15, and, you know, I can fit twice in those things.
So what would you say is on the show tonight on Sports Feed on CLTV at 6 o'clock.
Yeah, well, you know, with the starting six, we're going to talk a little bit about the Cubs and the White Sox. Of course, a little recap of the Blackhawks convention. We're going to have some Cubs talk in the middle of the show, a little media talk as well during this show here tonight. And, of course, one of my favorites, one of my favorite sections of the show, the segments of the show, is social fodder. There's some good stuff out there on social media. And Larry Hawley, who produces this show.
I've heard of Larry.
The man's a machine. He's the hardest working man in show business. And he always seems to find some pretty cool things. So we'll have that too.
All right. Andy, good to be with you today, brother.
See you, Carm.
Andy Mazur on Sports Feed tonight on CLTV. I'll take you the final half hour. 720 WGN. I'm Mark Carmen. Brian Noonan coming up at 6. Opportunity to talk to you. We're going to play a game here called Ask Carm Anything. You ask me something. If I don't answer it, I will give you Lou Malnati's pizza. You can ask me anything about anything outside of like my salary and Social Security and whatnot. Before we do that, though, I want to get something off my chest here. Michael Vick spoke out this week about Colin Kaepernick. I don't know if you missed the story. Michael Vick, of course, was a quarterback in the NFL for a long time, incredibly talented, had a very, very deserved suspension for and jail time for his treatment of animals, dogs specifically. Michael Vick then paid his debt to society, got another opportunity, and since then has been a upstanding guy. He spoke out this week about Colin Kaepernick, who doesn't have a job in the NFL. And he said that Kaepernick should cut his hair. And that drew a lot of criticism from Kaepernick himself. We have the cut, Dan. Let's hear. This is what Michael Vick said earlier this week on Fox Sports One, the show is the Undisputed. Here we go.
First thing we got to get Colin to do is cut his hair. You know, I mean, listen, I'm not up here to try to be politically correct, but you know, even if he puts cornrows in it, I don't think he should represent himself, you know, in that way in terms of, you know, just the hairstyle. Just go clean cut. You know, why not? You know, you're already dealing with a lot of controversy surrounding this issue.
And so Kaepernick tweeted at him saying that, have you ever heard of Stockholm Syndrome, which now you're basically, that appears when an abused victim develops a kind of respect and empathy towards their abuser, which is a pretty bold tweet by Kaepernick coming back at him. I think that Colin Kaepernick deserves a job in the NFL. I think that Colin Kaepernick should be able to wear his hair the way he wants to wear his hair. I think that anybody should be able to wear their hair the way they want to wear their hair. However, I also think that the reality of life is that you do have to present yourself in a certain way sometimes to get certain jobs. If you were going to try to get a job on Wall Street, you wouldn't walk into Smith Barney or whoever in without shaving, having long hair, and looking like you came right off the beach. You just wouldn't. Colin Kaepernick's trying to get his message out. He's choosing to go with a huge afro. I love the look. I think he looks cool. But there is something to what Michael Vick is saying. Michael Vick got thrown under the bus for what he said, and he apologized, and I really don't think that he needs to apologize at all. He's looking out in his mind for Kaepernick saying, hey, man, if you're going to be as outspoken and you're going to kneel and do all that stuff, maybe, you know, one thing you want to take off the table is a huge afro, right or wrong. And I think we can all agree, I would think, that it shouldn't matter how you wear your hair. But the reality is there's a lot of judgments out there, from hair to tattoos to whatever road you want to go down. And if I'm Colin Kaepernick and I'm trying to be employed by the NFL, what Michael Vick said is something that I would think about. Maybe it would look a whole lot if he shows up at some press conference where he's given out clothes like he's donated in the past, and he's donated millions of dollars, and all of a sudden he's got this really clean-cut look, maybe that does help him. How bad do you want to play in the NFL? It shouldn't matter, and it definitely shouldn't matter in the NFL where you've got guys who have done some pretty awful things, but with the amount of scrutiny that's on him, his appearance is going to be looked at in ways perhaps that it wouldn't be looked at otherwise, just because of the amount of attention that he's drawn to himself. So I thought it was just something from earlier in the week where I was like, you know, you got killed for saying that, but it's almost like he was being a parent. Hey, listen, Uncle Billy, son Bobby, you're going in for that job. Why don't you take a shower? Why don't you shave? Why don't you brush your teeth and make yourself, you know, look presentable? One more time, ideal world shouldn't matter, but in the reality in where we're living, it does matter. And when I come into WGN and I'm sitting here in the showcase studio, not to, you know, say that I dress impeccably, but I'm not going to come into the showcase studio on sitting on Michigan Avenue, you know, straight off the tennis court and haven't shaved and showered in a week. That would be completely and utterly ridiculous. So, you know, I just don't think what Vic said, he did not need to apologize at all. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Ask Carm anything goes like this. Do we have a guest on the line here, Dan? Is that Adam Hogue calling the show? Hang on a second. Bears training camp this week. What's up, Adam Hogue?
Hello, Carm.
How are you, sir? Were you calling because I texted you or because I was talking Kaepernick?
Because you texted me, because I was on a golf trip all weekend, and where I was, there was like no cell signal, and I drove out of where there was no cell signal, and I saw a barrage of text messages, including Sam Panionovich, apparently angry yesterday that no one was responding to him, and his request for all of us. So I saw yours, I saw Dan's, and I figured I should probably call into the show.
Well, thank you. I figured, you know, I only texted you once, and I texted you today, I think about 5 o'clock, because, you know, I knew that Dan Long was on it, but then I, you know, missed you, and so I just wanted to make sure you were okay. And training camp does start this week, but before we get to that, I do want to ask you, I don't know if you heard any of what I was saying about Vic and Kaepernick, but I don't think Vic needed to apologize to him. He said he was looking out for him. Said maybe you want to cut your hair. I don't. You know, you got a lot of eyeballs on you. I didn't think it was terrible.
I don't know. First of all,
Dan Orlovsky just got a job this week as a backup quarterback.
That's where I was going to go. I mean, it's kind of getting crazy that he still doesn't have a job. I don't think it's because of his hair, though.
Neither do I, but you could. It could sort of be like a sort of an olive branch, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, but when Dan Orlovsky, the guy who ran out of the back of the end zone once for a safety, just on his own, running from Jared Allen, gets a job, and Colin Kaepernick has it, it makes you think. But once again, I mean, Colin Kaepernick's also worth more money and is going to be signing a higher paid contract and wants to be competing for a starting job. So it's not quite the same thing as when a Dan Orlovsky, you know, fills the last spot on the quarterback depth chart.
Right. I mean, do you think that Kaepernick will get a gig sometime in August? Somebody goes down, whatever.
Well, I keep thinking he is going to get one. Because he's certainly one of the, you know, top, I mean, if there's 32 teams in the league and they're all carrying at least two, a lot of them three or four quarterbacks in the training camp, I mean, you're talking about around 90 quarterbacks. And you're telling me Colin Kaepernick isn't one of those?
Hard to believe.
It's really hard to believe. So I keep thinking, all right, well, this guy has to get a job eventually, no matter what the circumstances are here. But the fact he still hasn't gotten a job, it's pretty telling.
Let's talk Bears here, Hogue. I think it's extremely telling. We'll see what happens here. It makes me think that he probably is not going to get a job, no matter what happens. But We shall see. It's definitely something. The main thing I'll be paying attention to during training camp outside of the Bears, which is let's go. You're going to be in Bourbonnais come Wednesday, and everybody's going to be looking at Mitch Trubisky and Mike Glennon. What's your prediction here, Hogue? Let's just say for argument's sake that Glennon comes out there in the preseason and he's, I don't know, at a 40% completion rate, and Trubisky's fantastic, and he's leading the Bears up and down the field against second-string defenses. Nothing changes going into the season, right?
Well, I wouldn't say that. Look, what I think the Bears have done here is very smartly set up for the real possibility that their number two overall pick might not see the field in 2017. Now, it's a possibility, but I don't know that it's very, very likely that Trubisky won't play because, I mean, just look at last year. A guy named Matt Barkley, who the Bears didn't even have on the roster in the preseason, ended up playing most of the second half of the season. Guys get hurt, especially at the quarterback position, and other guys need to step up and play. So that's partly why Mark Sanchez is here, too, in case you start to get down to that. But I find it hard to believe that Mitch Trubisky will not play at all during the 2017 season. Now, that said, first and foremost, the thing that matters more than anything before Trubisky gets on the field is his understanding of the offense, okay? If he's not ready, if he's not understanding the offense, if he's not making that leap from the more spread type of college offense, almost no snaps out from under center, it's a big difference going to the NFL, and if he's not processing that, he's not going to see the field. Now, he seems like a guy who can process that and will be making that transition. So to kind of pick up on the scenario you sort of brought up there, Carm, if Mike Glennon is struggling and Mitch Trubisky does understand the offense and from a physical standpoint looks like he's at least as good as Glennon, if not better, which eventually he better be, because he's the number two overall pick, well, then certainly, why would you not play him? If he's ready, why would you not play him? And they will play him when he's ready. But they don't know when that's going to happen. So they need to prepare the fan base for the possibility that it might be Glennon for all of 2017.
Let's make an argument for fans to come on out to Bourbonnais and meet you this week, Hogue. Why, if somebody's never been to Bourbonnais to see the Bears practice off a 3-13 season, why should they come on out and experience training camp?
I think it's something cool to do at least once. I'm not gonna lie to you and say that it's anywhere near as exciting as watching a real football game. I'll give you the same recommendations I do every year. Make sure you come to one of the padded practices. They're mostly padded, but they won't be on Thursday. And I think Friday's actually closed to the fans altogether. So the first padded practice isn't until Saturday. That's always a fun one to watch because you get to see a draft pick like Adam Shaheen, who was playing at the Division II level last year, put pads on and practice against NFL players for the first time in a physical practice, and that's where you start to learn a lot about these guys. So, depending on where you live, it could be a long drive from the northern suburbs. If you're in the southern suburbs, it's a real easy drive down to Bourbonnais. It's worth doing at least once, but, if you don't make it down there, I don't think it's the end of the world either.
Okay, so not an overwhelming sell here. I get it. No, that's it. I think that's fair and good. That's how we should be. All honesty first. What are you looking at in storylines outside of the quarterback?
There's competition all over the roster. I mean, I think that only the outside linebacker position might be the only position where you pretty much know those five or six guys are going to be in the room. Otherwise, and Jordan Howard, you're starting running back, certainly. But other than that, I mean, there's competition everywhere, not just, hey, who's going to make a roster, but also who's going to be the starter. If Danny Trevathan's not ready to go, and I don't think he will be. I think he'll be starting on the pup list with that gruesome knee injury he suffered last year. Can Nick Kwiatkowski, your last year's fourth-round pick who showed signs of being good, can he take over that starting job in the preseason? Because he's going to have plenty of opportunity to do that. You know, can Leonard Floyd make the another big step in year two? And by the way, I'll share with you something I wrote last week in my 10 Bears Things column where I made a very early prediction that I think both Leonard Floyd and Cody Whitehair, so two second-year players, your first-round pick from last year, your second-round pick from last year, are going to make the Pro Bowl this year.
I saw that. It's pretty bold. Pretty bold, Adam Hogue.
Well, I don't think it's that bold. Cody Whitehair had an argument last year, but, you know, he's a rookie, and I'm not sure how many people are paying attention to him. So this year he's getting a lot more attention. And Leonard Floyd was on pace for double-digit sacks, and those concussions got in the way. So I think it's very possible that that could happen this year.
So let's go dream scenario. The Chicago Bears are competitive. They somehow get to, let's call it 7-9, 8-8. I asked your guy Rich Campbell this on Comcast Sportsnet the other day. And Mike Glennon, I want to go the other way here. Mike Glennon has a great season. He has, you know, whatever. He throws for 28 touchdown passes, 7 interceptions, completion percentage well into the 60s. Are they just going to be like, hey, Mitch, you're going to sit again and you're going to be Aaron Rodgers part two? Is that how you think that would go?
No. I think that, well, first of all, if that's that would be a dream scenario at the quarterback position, here's one possibility. You could trade Mike Glennon. And if Mike Glennon is that good, he's going to have some decent trade value, kind of like, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo. And the Patriots, I think, were asking for a first-round pick this year for Garoppolo, and no one gave it to him. But if you can get a decent draft pick for a guy that's going to have 2 years left on the contract, the money will be interesting. It's hard to kind of vaguely say how good of a season Glennon's going to have in this scenario, but you know, if it's good enough that someone's willing to pay that money, well, then I think that that's something you look at. And if you can't unload him, well, then, hey, you got two good quarterback options. And for a city that usually has zero, I don't see why that's a bad thing.
No, and I think it allows Ryan Pace to sleep well at night. At least that's what he's communicated, and I tend to believe him on that one. And
yeah. But let's be clear, though. I mean, Ryan Pace went all in on Mitch Trubisky and was totally invested over 4 months of keeping that a state secret. So he absolutely loves Mitch Trubisky. There's no question about it. And eventually, that's going to be the quarterback for the Bears, no matter how good or bad Mike Glennon is.
I like the scenario you painted there, too. If he was willing to be super creative, maybe they can get value for Glennon if he plays well, and then they can bring in their guy. That would not be a bad look. Hey, before you go and we get Brian Noonan in here, I asked the question earlier in the show here, Hogue, and I think I know your answer because you're a very level-headed Adam Hogue. But I assume you want the White Sox to lose all 4 games this week so you can get a higher draft pick and you don't care that it will benefit the Cubs? Or do you want to see him win a game, or two, or four?
I'm gonna be at Wrigley tomorrow. I'd like to see a good competitive game. I wouldn't mind seeing a rainout tonight so that Quintana can pitch tomorrow. That'd be awesome. Yeah. I don't know. That's a tough question. You know what? I think I want to see the White Sox, you know, play well and try to beat the Cubs this week. And most importantly, though, I want to see Yoan Moncada have a better 4-day stretch than maybe this beginning 4-day stretch that he's had so far.
Okay. So if Moncada hits a game-winning home run, you will be super happy about it.
Yes. In that scenario, I would be ridiculously happy about it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for checking in from your vacation there, Mr. Bears reporter/talk show host, and we will be glued to WGNRadio.com and at Adam Hoge on Twitter as the season, or at least the preseason and training camp, getting going this week.
Yeah, it all starts in Bourbon Day Wednesday. And, Carm, I appreciate you texting me and making sure I was okay. I do have to say, though, your text said, "Are you around?" And when I saw it, I thought, well, if I was around, I would be doing the radio show right now.
Yes, but that was a very broad around. You don't have to be around to do the radio show in studio. You could be around for a nice 10-minuter. I mean, I don't know what you do on your downtime.
Well, I'm always around for you, Carl.
Thanks, Adam. I appreciate that. Have a great Sunday night.
See you guys. You too.
All right, Adam Hoge. Bears training camp starting on Wednesday. Let's take our final timeout. Brian Noonan coming on up, 720 WGN.